here with episode 59 of the TV List video game podcast for TVList.net. Today we have Seth Gustellum.
Woohoo!
And Chris Dunn.
Yes, we do.
That's the what podcast?
The TV List video game podcast for TVList.net.
That still exists.
Which one?
I guess the podcast portion. I'm not.
Well, we're here. It must exist.
Yeah, the podcast version. The podcast still exists. The website still kind of exists.
You can still go to it. There's just nothing there.
It says LOL page broke. No.
It has like a 1993 GIF of like some guy working.
A spinning mailbox where you can like email me.
No, not that one. The under construction site that all those like.
Oh yeah, pardon our dust it. While we. Yeah. But
Craig found himself in Japan spiritually or something.
Something like that. Nah, you know, basically for the past, I put a lot of effort into the site. Not saying that anyone else has. I'm only speaking for myself. I don't presume to speak for anyone else. But I have put a lot of time into everything TV and Lust, and it's become very tiring and very consuming. You know, I haven't been able to do as much of other things that I also enjoy, you know, and
Wait. Let me interrupt you in the middle of your, like, profound speech here.
It's not really profound. It's really random, I'm sure.
Might be. Like, also, everything I say. No, like, before everybody, like, gets sad listening to Craig, I'm gonna give away another free video game today, so.
Me too.
There keep listening. You can't give away two video games.
Well.
Fine, you give away yours.
No.
It's your podcast. You give away yours.
It's our podcast. Nobody would listen to just me.
I would.
You might be the only one. You might be the only one. But, okay, we'll figure it out as we go. This is totally impromptu, so we'll figure it out as we go. Someone will be getting a game this podcast, and, you know, maybe even next podcast. It's just game mania here with TV and Lust. That might be the only reason why anyone listens to us.
Yes.
But, you know, the weight of the responsibility was really, really crushing me. But the thing is, it's like you sort of set this standard for yourself, and, I mean, how do you stop doing it? Not only for yourself, but, I mean, like, for, like, the audience, too. Like, how do you just suddenly wake up one day and go, okay, well, here's a lot less content than, or here's nothing. I'm just quitting. Like, how do you do that? I
did it surprisingly easy.
Yeah, it was really easy for you, wasn't it? But when I was in Japan, once I was in a position to not do that work, I found it very easy to not do that work. And then I came home and I didn't get right back into the swing of things. Because there's a lot that goes on that people don't see. It's not just like the videos or like the writing. I mean, there's really like I'm reading press releases. I'm going through email. I'm combing websites and Twitter. Like there's a lot of work that even people don't even see, let alone the work that they do see. And I remember one night I came home from working at the Toy Vault, the comic book store, retro game store that I work part-time at. And I came home, instead of doing that shit like I normally would have done, I sat down and I played video games, and that was actually way better. And I don't know. Like, I mean, I think that I'm probably at a point where I'm more interested in talking about games rather than covering them. Where covering them's fun, I guess, in a way, and if it were, like, my day job that I used to, like, pay my bills, I would cover the shit out of games. But as a hobby, it's just not as fun anymore. I'd rather just talk about them. So we're not doing news on the site anymore, which is unfortunate. Chris was doing a great job pretty much carrying the weight of that for the past, month or two, Chris?
Something like that.
Yeah, you know, he's doing a great job, but, I mean, I can't ask Chris to basically be the sole person doing that. And I can't commit to it. I can't even commit to the news on my own site. I can't do it. So we're not doing news anymore. But we'll still be doing reviews. We'll still be doing, like, editorials and features. And obviously still doing the podcast. One person on Twitter said, don't make the form go away. And the form's not going – that's not going anywhere either, so don't worry. And, by the way, we do have a form, so check that out.
TVandLust.net/forum.
Yeah. There it is. And there's a little forum button on the menu bar when you go to TVList.net, too. So, I mean, there it is. It's just, I couldn't keep up the pace, and so I had to scale back to what works for us. I mean, I thought we did great with news, but, I mean, 90% of our news stories were culled from other sites, but I think we were like an aggregate for, you know, quote unquote interesting news, you know, things that were that might have gotten lost in the shuffle. I think we were pretty good at that. But the truth is, most of the news is from other sites. So, I mean, it's a little more work, but I mean, I think if our listeners kept their eyes peeled to other sites, they would see the same exact things that we see.
Yeah.
So that it's not that big of a loss. It sucks, but it's not that big of a loss. But we'll still have the things I think that are unique to us, the podcast, our features, our reviews, you know. So that's good, I think.
Should be good.
Steph's not writing anymore either. That's another change. Steph will be on the podcast when she has time. She's not completely gone, but Steph also works like at least one full-time job. I think she works a part-time one too. She goes to school. She's a mother. She's a wife. The fact that
you guys are crazy with all your stuff.
I know, right?
Right.
I have one full-time job, and that's too much.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, I don't know how she does. I mean, I have a lot of obligations too, but don't have a kid. Like that's that's probably a big one. Yeah. I'm sure. So it's a miracle she got anything done, but she you know, she was honest that, you know, she can't really write anymore, but she'll be on the podcast when she can. So that's good. That's where we're at. We just have to be smart about this, I think. But anyway, since we don't do news anymore, I think basically we're just going to pick things from the week that we thought were interesting. I don't expect Seth to do this either, but...
What? How do you pick the thing? We need to, like, organize this better, though, because if we pick the same thing, what if we're all like, hey, did you see that thing? Oh, yeah, and then we're
yeah,
just
we,
like...
Yeah, we can organize this thing better.
No, I don't want to organize it, because then I can say, oh, I did pick that thing. That's why I don't have something.
You just totally stole Seth's out, like, that's... You just.
Yeah, that was mine. Damn you. Whatever, we'll just both pick whatever Craig picked.
I just wanted to talk about Nintendo Direct. I thought that was probably the biggest thing.
Oh, that was fine.
That was seriously. Did you like see this thing quote unquote live-ish?
I did see it live. Yeah,
I did too.
Yeah,
Chris and I was reading about it.
You guys were probably waking up, and I like just didn't go to sleep.
Waking up, I was at work. I was already awake. I was home. I was home, but I just got out of work.
Yeah, I was just waking up.
I mean, it was like, what time was it? It was like 1 a.m. and I was like, might as well. Should I go to sleep? And I was like, oh, that Nintendo thing's in like only 3 hours. Might as well just stay up. Yeah, so that was interesting.
That was interesting. You know, I like the new information about the firmware update. You know, we're getting 3D video filming capabilities along with stop motion. And that
the stop motion looked awesome.
That's that did look really cool, awesome. Yeah.
You know, they need, I don't think he mentioned it, but they need, you know, it could be cool if they could add some kind of quick, like, upload or something like that to, like, YouTube or some, you know, even Nintendo-branded, like, community page or something. I think that would be.
I mean, they did with their photos.
You could publish them to Facebook, yeah.
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 So I hope they have something like that for YouTube.
Would be nice. And they're also adding another Find Me map. Hopefully with more hats, because I have all the hats.
I don't even, like, I haven't played anything under that channel at all.
Wow, go to Tokyo, man. You get so many goddamn street passes.
Or Disney.
Alright, I'll get right on that.
Yeah, you get right on that.
I'm almost when you go to Disneyland. I got a ton when I was in Disney World.
I am going, like, later this season, so I'll definitely do that.
You should go to Not Scary Farm.
I did that once, and it's just a bunch of dudes, like, jumping out of bushes and shit at you nonstop. It's like, what? I don't want to be scared, like, not, like, let me just walk around the fucking park. I don't need guys jumping out.
It's true. That's, they chase you, too. They chase people. He's, like, walking, like, I'm trying to get the roller coaster, motherfucker.
It's not good for your heart.
I liked it. But, we're also getting at least one new puzzle. I don't know how many puzzles we're getting. And you know what? You know, if they do this, like, say, once a year, add a new Find Me map with a couple new hats and one new puzzle, like, once a year, I think that'd be pretty good support. I'd be happy about that. Especially here in the U.S. where, like, fuck, it takes you, like 8 months alone just to finish a puzzle. Street pass with.
I'm sure as it sells more systems, I mean, it'll be easier to do, but, yeah, I have not. I've finished, I think, one puzzle the entire time I've had my 3DS, so.
And then when you try to buy a puzzle piece, it's like gambling. Like, they might give you a piece you already have. Like, this isn't fucking helpful. I don't want all that just to spend my coins on a piece I already have.
Yeah.
So, that's completely not helpful.
And some sort of messaging system?
Yeah, where, you know, of course it's Nintendo Fi, but you draw. It's like PictoChat, but, you know, it's like messages instead. And what I got out of that, it was that it was more like the Wii, like, messaging channel, you know, whatever Wii did, you know, how you can send, like, almost like email to people.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And, which is good. I'm glad there's some kind of messaging system, but I think the drawback to it is that it's probably not something you can play while you hit the home button while you're playing a game. I don't think it's something you can do mid-game.
Yeah, it's probably a separate app or something.
Yeah, that's the impression.
I mean, you can still browse the internet, like, when you hit the home button and you're in a game.
Yeah, so I don't... Right, but I think the way... I mean, I don't know if they can alter the firmware that much and put that, like, in the top row of...
They fucking better.
I hope so, too. I don't see why they could. If you can browse the internet while with a game...
Yeah, exactly. I think no they should be able to use the messaging app. And it also looks like you can, like, leave little short voice clips.
Yeah, you can drag sound and picture files from your 3DS into the messages.
That's pretty cool.
That is pretty
cool. I mean, I thought it was really cool you could take, like, 3D pictures with the 3DS, but I had no way to share them, you know? So
right.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
That is very cool. I think it's pretty neat. I mean, it's a little Nintendo-fied, of course, but it's...
I like it. I like the writing out messages.
I do, too. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
Iwata talked a little bit about Mario Kart 7, which looks like it's getting some community features. And on it, you know, this is shaping up to be, like, the best Mario Kart. Like, everything I see and hear about it, I'm really excited. I think it looks great, like, you know, graphically. I like the idea of customizing your car. I like the idea of the, you know, different, like, go-go gadget vehicles. I like the fact that you can race with a Mii and, like, these community features they're announcing. And it's
still, I like the no more flying blue show.
It doesn't fly?
Is that confirmed?
It's, as far as I know, yes.
All right, because I would see more from it, because that's the only thing. Because I'm sitting here thinking, like, oh my god, this is going to be awesome, and then but still, despite all these positive things coming out for it, I still keep thinking, fuck everyone if that blue show's in there.
It's supposed to be like it's supposed to be back to like N64 blue show,
where it careens down the path and it takes everyone.
That sounds good.
That's a little more. Yeah, that sounds good. And but I think it's also the frequency. Like, it wasn't like the blue show that targeted the first player, which was bullshit. You know, if I had a choice between targeting the first player or going down the track, I would prefer
to especially track. Like, if you're in like 12th place and use it, it's not really going to help you.
It's a pure spite weapon. But it's really the frequency. Like, You see it like three times a race, when really, ideally, I should see it no more than three times in an entire cup.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You know, because it's just so overpowered. And I get, here's where the blue shell gets me. It's not while I'm playing the game to make progress. It's after that. It's when I would play Mario Kart 64 and even Double Dash for just pure enjoyment. Like, I would listen to, like, a good album. I would play them for pure enjoyment after I finished, after I accomplished everything that those games had to offer.
Wait, you play Double Dash for enjoyment?
Yeah. It's negotiable how much enjoyment I got out of it. But I, you know, with everyone after that, well, the two that came after that, I guess, I played them, like, less and less for enjoyment. Like, the DS one I played for some because it's on the go, but the Wii one I don't think I played really at all for just pure enjoyment. I actually think there's one or two characters I haven't unlocked because I just haven't played it that much, because that blue shell just destroys that pleasant experience you get from playing Mario Kart. And it ruins multiplayer too, because, I mean, that's, you know, I can't really play, I just don't want to play the game after I finished, quote unquote, finished it at all.
Yeah.
I mean, it's there a lot, but I don't know. I still think win a lot of races when I play online, despite it being there. I don't know.
Well, see, here's the thing. I still win the races, too, but, I mean, that doesn't mean that it's not frustrating.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like I'm not winning races. It's just
I think, honestly, I'm just used to it now. I'm like, oh, there's the fucking blue show. Oh, well.
Right.
You know, but I shouldn't have to be.
I agree.
Used to that.
I agree. So, cut down on the frequency. I'm glad they changed how it operated, if they in fact did. But it's really the frequency that bothers me. That many times in a single race, like, man, that's like being at war and just, like, one side just pressing the nuclear launch button, like, eight times. Like, ha ha, you're dead, ha ha, you're dead. We get
They should do like Smash Brothers, where you can choose, you know, which items you want to have and which ones you don't, and you know how often they appear and stuff.
I think in the Wii version you could shut off the blue shell.
Oh really?
But I think only when you're playing multiplayer, only when you're playing like with other people. I think that might be an option.
Gotcha. I mean, I could see if they didn't do it in like the cup, but I mean, maybe for, you know, multiplayer or versus or right. You know, just playing around.
Yeah, I agree that you should be able to alter those things, but I think at the same time, like, it just by default it shouldn't be like
no, definitely I
ruin agree. Your day levels of blue shells just raining yeah. from the sky. And Iwata talked about some downloadable games which look really good, and I'm really excited. You know, the thing is, like, Nintendo is not, you know, Nintendo have a problem with, you know, downloadable games, and they do, but it's not the games themselves. Like, Nintendo has good downloadable games, and it's amazing the kind of quality. Like, there's such a stark contrast when you compare, like, a Nintendo downloaded game to, like, something on, like, the Apple App Store. And there are great games on there, don't get me wrong, I'm not completely diminishing the Apple App Store, but the quality is remarkably different. Their problem is letting you know that these games exist in the first place.
Yeah.
Like, most people don't even know. Like, I talked about A Kappa's Trail one time here on the podcast. Nobody even knew what the fuck that game was. Nobody knew that game existed.
Nope.
But it was a pretty fun game. But these games look really good. The Rolling Western looks awesome. You play as an armadillo and crash into people. It looks like it has some tower defense mechanics. Well, I like the look of that a lot.
And the tower defense thing, like, just threw me way
up. I'm pretty sure we
saw clips of this at, like, E3 or something.
Yeah, there was a trailer, I think.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I don't remember any of the tower defense stuff in that trailer. And then, like, all of a sudden I see this one, and the dude's, like, building up a tower and shooting monsters. Like, huh.
Yeah, it's like, no kidding. And then there's, I think it's called Nimble Sakura Samurai or something like that.
That one where you dodge slices and slice people?
Yeah, yeah. It looks like Punch-Out, but with, like, samurais. Like, it looked really, really cool. You basically dodge incoming attacks and then counterattack enemies. And that looks like pretty much the crux of the game. I mean, it does, like I said, it looks like Punch-Out. You know, you're really only doing these battles. But it looked like a lot of fun. It looked really good. And the music and the art remind me a bit of Okami.
What's the game with the little cat-faced thing where you pull blocks?
Here it's going to be called, I think it's called Pushmo.
Pushmo, yeah.
And that looked really cool, too. It looked a little like Catherine, but instead of, like, pulling out individual blocks like you would in Catherine, like, you pull out, like, whole, like, sections here. Like, the maze that you need to climb up, like, could look like a picture. Like, they showed, like, an 8-bit Mario.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to pull out particular, you know, you have to pull out these whole sections and, you know, negotiate entire whole chunks of colored blocks.
It looks like you could build your own stages and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So
that looks really cool.
And that one, you know, that E3 where you, like, build your own monster, like, in that platform, I forget what they, like, Picture Lives?
Picture Lives, yeah.
It's called Freaky Forms here, and I'm excited for that as well. I think Rolling Western comes out quarter one, and Pushmo, I think, comes out in November, and Freaky Forms comes out in December, or maybe the other way around. And we haven't heard anything about the Samurai game here for here at all. But I also think price might be a problem for Nintendo. I think Rolling Western was given a price tag. I think that was the only one I read that had a price tag. It was like $7, which I expected it to be. And these games look like they're quality enough to be worth $7. I have no problem paying it. The problem is the average consumer is going to have $7. I can download some Cut the Rope ripoff for, you know, 99 cents. And fair enough, if you're only looking to just pass the time with your games, you're not looking for necessarily the quality, yeah, you can download all sorts of games for 99 cents. You're absolutely right. So $7 really is not a sweet spot for the average consumer. If Nintendo can get these down to $5, which is where they should be, I think, for the average consumer, not based on quality, mind you, but to get the game out there more, I think that would be much more beneficial to them.
Definitely $5.
Yeah, right.
But then, like, I don't know what they're going to do. Have they started charging for, like, regular NES games yet or anything?
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
I wonder what they're going to price those at.
Well, I mean, what are the Game Boy games at? Those are, like, $3 or $4, I mean. That's really where the NES game should be at, I think.
Yeah. I imagine the NES games will probably be like 5 because that's what they are on the Wii.
Right, and I think that's
I think that has to come down.
Yeah, yeah. The thing is though, like their content, like Nintendo's like back catalog. The reason why they can charge so much is because that those games still hold value in terms of like quality.
And, some of it, I don't think. Okay, like, not ice, all. I don't think like Ice Climber should be like priced the same as Final Fantasy. You know.
Okay. Fair enough. Yep.
I hope they vary them. Like they have the Game Boy games. You know, Game Boys are. I think there are some that are 3, and there are some that are 4. You know, so maybe they'll do that with NES games on here.
Yeah, that would be the smartest. Yeah, I just think that it's not that I don't think that some of these games aren't worth it. Like Ice Climbers.
I think might if they want worth... people to. I think if they want people to buy them.
That's the key thing. Yeah. It's not that the games aren't worth it. It's just that if they want people to buy them, they have to be a little more smarter in how they handle pricing. And advertising and everything, too, because it's just like, you know, when you sign to Xbox Live, you sign into, like, a row of, like, ads, which sucks. But, I mean, it tells people, like, hey, you have shit you can look at here. You know, you turn on your 3DS. Thankfully, there are no intrusive ads. But, you know, people who don't know about that shop, They should probably RTFM or something. They're not going to know that those games even exist, let alone what they're not going to know what the price is either. So it just doesn't even.
They did do a commercial for like Four Sword anniversary.
Did they?
Oh yeah, with Robin Williams.
Yeah, I think it was like a UK commercial.
Oh, I didn't. Yeah. You know, people have mentioned this before. It's really a smart thing. They should just put, like, a download coupon into, like, a game. You know, release Super Mario 3D Land with a coupon to download some Mario thing on the eShop. I mean, that's what they should. And it gets people on. Yeah, you know, you're, quote-unquote, giving away a game, but it gets people aware of the store, and that could bring in way more money than what you're giving out, so.
Yeah. Well, like, when the DSi came out, that came with, I think, 1,000 free points or something. They should do that again.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Something along those lines. But... well, it's Nintendo. They won't. I think they're at a point where they think that like their retail games just sell. And yeah, some of them they push really hard. Like they're pushing like Skyward Sword. There's a ton of media. Like there's a ton of things you know that they're doing with Skyward Sword right now before release. But they don't have to do that. They could just say, "Hey, bitches, Zelda exists," and then they can just throw it on the like store shelves with Link on the cover, and that's they could probably do just that and still sell millions of copies, no problem.
I don't doubt it.
And they can't do that in the download space. They can't do that.
But they try.
They try, but I'm sure it's getting them nowhere. And I'm sure they're like, "Why should we even bother with this?" Well, advertise your games. You might see a little bit of a difference there.
Like I hate to say it, but I think they should have something integrated like Xbox Live, where like you just see all those games like right when you log in.
Yeah.
Some kind of. Yeah, something there. I mean, I think like the Wii on its channel on its tile shows the games, but shows like new releases. But I mean,
yeah.
Sometimes, like I swear, sometimes I see some old ass games.
Yeah,
on
sometimes
list.
It happens too. Yeah. But I mean, it would be nice if something was there. I don't know, maybe on the top screen. I guess it downloads it as Spot Pass data, maybe. I mean,
yeah, that would work.
I would think that would be hypothetically possible because they take all Spot Pass and they hide them in under that one app. And yeah, sure that works, but it's like it's just buried announcements, you know. Like I guess I'll check it just to remove the dot.
Yeah, they can do something though because I think when Nintendo Video came out, I had that like the little gift box on my menu, and I had to click on it, and it said go to the eShop and you can download Nintendo Video.
Yeah, but if you have a ton of shit on there. Which I guess if you do have a ton of shit, you already know the shop exists.
Yeah.
If you really want to get announcements out to everyone, that package is going to be buried at the end of your fucking list.
Yeah. But, I mean, my point is there's got to be something they can do where it would, right. You know, they can make it appear.
Yeah, yeah.
At least better than they do now.
And I don't mind that it's Nintendo-fied like that gift, but it's got to be something.
Yeah.
So, what else do they talk about? Is there anything that I missed?
Do we touch like how the communities work in Mario Kart 7?
No, it has. It's like a channel built into the game. It's almost like Mario Kart Wii's channel. But
hey, I thought you could like set up like one person could set up a community that just has one code, and then everybody adds that one code, and then they could all like get in on that one community.
Is that true? I must have missed that part. If that's the case,
this is what I read briefly. I've been out of town all weekend, so.
Oh, okay. No, I mean, that would be, I mean, that's just pretty cool. I mean, the whole community aspect, I'm glad Nintendo's getting behind it. You can download Ghosts as, like, Street Pass data and Spot Pass data. You can have a whole, like, I mean, the entire race could be just Ghost data that you've downloaded.
Yeah, I saw footage of that.
Which is really cool.
Did you guys see those Harrison Ford Sony commercials for Uncharted 3?
No, I know they exist, but I didn't see them.
Yeah, I heard about them. I didn't see it, though.
I don't know, dude. Harrison Ford doesn't look like he's really into it that much.
He's probably he's there for the paycheck.
When I was I'm sure he's not into it.
Last time I was in Japan, Tommy Jones is hawking for some Tory Boss coffee, and he's still doing it. Like, I mean, he's not really doing that all that much here. It was like Captain America in the past like 5 years. I don't know, but
I think he's gonna be. Isn't there another Men in Black or something coming out?
I think I heard something about that. That's a thing.
Is he in it, though, or is there going to be, like, a new cast or something?
I think I read he's in it. My friend was telling me about the movie, so.
Huh.
I'm always, like, not sure of these things, but I'm usually sure my info, like, checks out afterwards, so. Let's see. Yeah, Tommy Lee Jones.
Huh. No.
It's supposed to be May 25th, 2012.
How is that coming out so soon? Don't they have to, like, film movies and stuff these days?
Wikipedia Maybe. Says they started filming last November.
Wow.
There you go.
Who knew?
Wow. No kidding. It's a really subdued episode of the podcast. Like, hey, man. So Mario Kart, man. Check it out. I just got up for everyone's information. I literally just got up. I would be more energetic. But
Craig is the new Seth.
I'm, like, literally half asleep. Yeah, I am. Is there anything else? I mean, I'm sure stuff happened this week, but nothing that really caught my attention, I don't think.
Nah. I think
the Nintendo stuff was the biggest stuff I saw.
Right.
I actually did have that on my list, so don't think that I actually didn't find anything.
I am not really that concerned. Not today. Maybe next week, but today I'm like...
Oh, especially like since Craig threw it out like just a few days ago. Oh, this is what we should probably do.
I know. Sorry. But, yeah, so I guess that's all we're discussing about news. I guess, I just thought I'd talk about Japan. I don't want to...
Wait. Before we get into Japan or whatever.
Yeah.
Chris, how'd those dancing lessons go?
Oh, yes.
They went.
They went, huh?
And I have to go back on Tuesday for more.
Oh, yeah. You don't want to look like a fool up there in front of everybody at your wedding.
Hey, no matter how many lessons I take, I'm going to look like a fool. Trust me, I am fully aware of this already.
So why do you have to take dancing lessons?
Because I don't know how to dance.
Like, not even, like, slow dance? Like, that's not... Really?
You want to look good for your first dance at your wedding, Craig.
No, I mean, I know. I guess that's true. I mean, you don't... Yeah, but...
Well, we're mainly doing it because there was a Groupon. And we got a
okay.
For, like, two lessons. And, I mean, we might go and do a little more just, you know, to do something. But, I mean, you know, I do want to, you know, not be terrible at my wedding. So.
Okay. Fair enough. I mean, it's fun to laugh at you. Don't get me wrong.
But... Oh, yeah, I know, but I'm not on the
He's like, oh, I know, it's fun to laugh at
No,
me.
I want him to, like, have a wonderful time.
I want him to have a good time, too.
I don't doubt that it's fun to laugh at me, but I want to be on the fun side of it, you know?
Okay.
It'll be fun for you, for somebody else to laugh at me, but will that be fun for me? No.
I don't know.
I do, trust me.
Okay. I'm pretty sure you would enjoy.
I've been laughed at plenty in my life.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, boy. Japan.
Japan.
Which is like the laziest topic in the world. Guys, want to hear about my vacation?
No.
But
it's going to be a great conversation.
I know. It's not really. Yeah. I kind of went to PAX East. I just talked and had a sore throat afterwards. It's not really. You guys back me up and ask some questions.
All right.
So how was it, Craig?
It was excellent. I would live in Tokyo if I could.
Did you see any Japanese people?
There were Japanese people there. In fact, coming home and hearing people speak English was very weird.
Hmm.
I guess. And you know,
is it?
It is. It was weird.
What about like Dana? She was speaking English, right?
Yeah, but that's like we came home, and like the night after we came home or something like that, I went out to the bar, and you know, our bartender was there, and I was a little tipsy, and I was like, "It's weird you're speaking English right now."
It's all right. Get the fuck out of here. You're catching me.
No, nah. She's like this like little girl. Like she can't do anything about it.
She has a very gruff voice for a little girl.
Yeah, she does. But you know, and it was weird because like last night, like. At work, like my coworker brings.
I'm sorry, I'm just picturing like a 5-year-old serving you drinks now.
No, not a little girl, a girl that is
this little girl.
Yeah.
Would you like some lemonade with that, mister?
I put sprinkles in it. I was watching my coworker brings in movies, and we just sort of play them, and like if it's busy, it's busy. We don't really watch it, but it's like background noise. And he brought in like Hostel. He was bringing like these horror movies and things, and. And in there's actually 2 Japanese girls, and they speak the shittiest Japanese. And I'm like at a point where like I can go, oh, that's bullshit Japanese.
It's look at this guy; he thinks he's a fucking professional now. Are they Japanese?
Are they Jap? I don't know if they're Jap. They're Asian, but like their accents and like their pronunciations are so bad, like awful, awful. And I can detect that now. I have a bullshit Japanese detector.
They're probably from that region of Japan you didn't go to.
No, these were bad. they do have regional, you know, sort of dialects, the regional ways to say things, but no, these were just awful.
Just bad.
I mean, it was hostile. I mean, you really, but I mean, like, nah.
They're probably a couple Americans from, like, Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah. Konnichiwa. Now, speaking of that, you know, we were in Ueno, which has Ueno Park, which is like, I don't know, like their central park or something. And I was taking pictures, and like this gaggle of like schoolgirls came up like behind me, and they're like, "Hello, hello," and I said, "Konnichiwa," and one of them like whipped around and asked me if I spoke Japanese in Japanese. And I said, "Oh yeah, a little," and they thought that was hilarious. That was.
you just made they were laughing their day.
Because they were using their bullshit Japanese detector.
I was using their bullshit English detector. That's hello. That's yeah.
You should have asked them if they spoke English.
No, that's okay. I'm sure they didn't. I'm sure hello is about all they knew. I think they just wanted to use English because we were at Meiji Shrine and there were some schoolgirls behind us. And they're, you know, I don't know if they were, it was a class trip or something, but there's only a couple of them. And they're walking behind us, and all of a sudden from behind us, I hear, "I don't speak English." And oh man, we died laughing because she just wanted to say something in English, you know? And I almost whipped around and said, you know, I don't speak Japanese. And I didn't. I let it go because I'm like, whatever. I'm not going to, like, I'm not going to encourage this right now. But that was pretty funny. You know, the people there in general are like, you know, one of our listeners said his friends put it best that Japan has a distinct lack of jerks. And that's pretty much where it's at. It's just... Things happen there that it can never happen here in the U.S.
Like getting street passes.
Like getting street passes. I got plenty of those. I got lots of street passes, man. Holy crap. But, no, like, people, like, they're in a Starbucks. So, you know, you see this happening, like, in a restaurant. I saw this happening, like, in arcades. People just, like, leave their shit where they are. It's their keys and their wallet. They just leave it there on the table, whatever, on the arcade machine. And then they go to the bathroom. They just leave it there. And nobody takes it. Not only do they expect no one to take it, no one does. No one, that doesn't happen.
You should have taken something. Teach them a lesson. Put the fear into them.
That would have just, I mean, I think that would have blown their minds that someone would have taken their stuff. Because it just doesn't happen. I consider it a good day here in America when everyone I pass on the road, like, uses their directional light. I can't expect them to not take my stuff. Like, that's a completely different league. You know? And we were on a subway platform, we're waiting for the train, and we're just looking at like an exit map, And this old Japanese guy comes up to us, and he asks us, in English, you know, if we need help. And we didn't need help. We knew our way around, and I can read the signs anyway. It's not a big deal. And but then we start talking. We told him that we're going to Asakusa, and he said, "Oh, I work at the information counter right outside the train station. You know, if you want to drop by." It was very, very pleasant, very, very nice. And I'm like, that would never fucking happen in New York. That would never happen in New York. Like, people on subway platforms, you don't make eye contact in New York. And not that, I've been in New York plenty of times, right? And so, like, there isn't this myth that everyone is an asshole in New York is not true. They're not. But I can't imagine in a country where you have so many people upset that press 2 for Spanish is a thing, would approach some foreigners on a subway platform and ask them in their language if they need help. I don't see that happening. It could, but I don't see it happening.
Also, you get paid in chips when you hold elevators for people.
Wait, what?
You told the story on your Twitter.
This did happen. We were in the hotel, and some two old Japanese ladies were, trying to make the elevator, so, we held it for them. And they gave us some, like, Pringles-like chip stars, and they gave us, like, these they were like Andy Cap fries, but they were flavored like seafood. So they gave us food. They paid us. Americans like food, right? So they gave us food for holding up. It was very nice. I mean, that's – I don't know. It's just a totally different place, and I would live there if I could. But the first day, it was like the first full day. Of course, the first thing we did was go to Akihabara. We went to Akiba.
And of course, you got to do that on the first day.
I get the spending out of the way, and that was awesome. We spent a lot more time in there than we did last time we were there. And like I said, we got a ton of new street passes. We got there too early. Like, shit opens at like 11. I'm like, fuck yeah, let's get our day started. Like, woo, let's do this. And we get there, and fucking nothing is open. I'm like, son of a bitch. KFC was open. KFC was serving breakfast. I don't know what was up with that.
What's breakfast?
Dude, like, nothing's open there at 11. Like, McDonald's doesn't even stop serving breakfast at 11, so.
Right. Yeah, nothing was open, so we just kind of, like, wandered around. Got a lot of street passes. Bought a lot of games. I did buy, like, some. I bought, like, Wii games. I bought a bunch of Wii games.
Did you give me Dynamic Slash?
I did not. I did not find that at all.
Ah, this guy.
And if I found one copy, it would have been for me. If I found two, I would have gotten it for you.
Aww.
Yeah, there was nothing. I think Peter wanted like the Japanese version of Deadly Premonition for the PS3. Now I did see that, but we didn't go back to Akiba, so I kept an eye out for it in other places we went, but I didn't see it anywhere else. Basically almost all the games I bought were used. I think only the Dragon Quest like 25th anniversary was brand new. Everything else was used, but the used market there is just totally different. You go into GameStop and like there's like Crayola crayons like. All over your game case, and maybe you have a man. It's not like that there at all. It might as well be brand new when you buy it used. So,
do you know, I've been to like Best Buys recently, and their used games are in like really good condition.
Probably because they tell people, no, that looks like your dog chewed on it. Get it the fuck out of our store.
Probably.
And, they probably, feel like it's, at their discretion when they take your game. GameStop don't care. And, GameStop employees will tell you, like, that's a benefit. Like, oh, you can bring in any game and get at least a dollar for it. Because, where else can you do that? Yeah, but on the flip side, you're selling that game for $5. Like, that's not – you're selling this bullshit game that you know is bullshit. And you're selling it. Like, that's not cool. It's not a good thing. Turn things away. Like, no thank you. You already have, like, 87 copies of, Madden, 2009. We don't need this. But they won't. They won't do that. But, it was just a great fun browsing through because there's a ton of different shops. And the selection and the prices vary from, like, stores right next to each other. And so it was a lot of fun browsing the used games there because it was just very different from here. They're in great condition, some really good prices. And it just wasn't uncommon to go into a store and see, like, brand new games, like, used all up on these shelves. But then also see, like, Famicom games and Game Boy Color games there. Dreamcast games used. It was just it was really, really cool. What else did we do? I mean, I think that's pretty much all that people care about, like the video games.
What games did you get, Craig?
What games I got a lot. For the Wii, I got Tales of Graces, which I can't get to load. It won't load at all. I googled it briefly, and it seems like other people have had the problem as well. I guess maybe a particular homebrew application works best with it, but all the ones I have don't work. Gecko and USB loader don't work. Hmm. And I thought like something went wrong because that was the first game I tried because like I wanted to play the other games that I got more, so that was the first game that I tried, and you know, just to give it a shot and get it out of the way, and it wouldn't load. I thought something went wrong with my homebrew channel, so I'm sitting here like feverishly trying to figure out what the fuck's going on. But no, homebrew channel was fine. Like that's just the game just doesn't want to load. I got The Last Story and Pandora's Tower, which I know are coming to Europe, but the Japanese doesn't really bother me. I can play the games fine. In fact, I think Last Story is probably kind of import friendly. I don't think it's really that difficult, especially that all the tutorials have like video clips and stuff with them, and a lot of the menu is in English, and so it's really not hard to grasp, and it's pretty straightforward. It's pretty linear JRPG, so I think it would be pretty easy for importers. I also picked up the Dragon Quest 25th Anniversary Collection. I don't even know if I'm going to play that. Especially, I mean, at the very least, like a third of that, 33% of that, like, Dragon Quest 1 just isn't worth playing more than once. Because it's almost like a puzzle game, really, like with JRPG like trappings. Like, basically, you just go here to get this item so that you can go here and get that item so you can go here and get this item so that you can win the game. Like, that's...
Well, grinding levels the entire way.
Well, yeah, grinding the shit out, yeah.
And that's just like a ROM dump, right? It's not like a remake or anything?
Yeah, well, they actually have each... They have two versions of each.
Oh, yeah, they have, like, the Super Famicom one, right, too, right?
But they are ROM dumps, yes.
Yeah.
But it also came with, like, this really, like, this neat, like, comic book thing, so... Mm-hmm. It was a pretty nice little set. I got the collector's edition of Soul to Robo. My friend got that for me for my birthday, because it was my birthday while I was gone. And I got Bomberman for, like, the Game Boy. It came in a metal tin. It came in, like, what looked like a Band-Aid container. But that was its packaging, and I'm like, holy shit, this is the coolest thing ever. So I bought that.
Have you opened it? Are you sure it's not just Band-Aids in there?
Bomberman Band-Aids.
Yeah. No, it's a game. I've opened it. It's a game. I got Children of the Atom for Saturn, too. I like that funny game. You ever play that, Seth?
Children of who's a what?
Children of the Atom.
X-Men. Yeah, X-Men. Fighting game.
Yeah. I like that one a lot, but, I mean, I paid, like, a third of it. You know, a third of what I would have paid here, you know, in Japan.
Dude, Magneto is a fucking asshole at the end of that game, so if you could beat him, good luck.
I use Omega Red like I would, like E Honda. I would just, like, tentacle whip the shit out of people.
That's how they do it in Japan.
That's... But,
I'm, like, looking up this Bomberman tin case, and that looks awesome.
It is. I saw it. I'm like, this is a real game, and so
I bought it. There's other Game Boy tins.
Yeah, I saw one other one at least, but you know, I wasn't gonna sit there and buy all the tins, so I just bought the Bomberman one because, quite frankly, I'm buying it for the tin. I'm buying it for the uniqueness of the packaging. It was only like $8, so I mean, I might as well get the one that seems like it's a, you know, decent game. I mean, Bomberman's fun, so I mean, might as well get the one that's a fun game as well. So
looks like one of the. Well, before they were Advance Wars, I guess Game Boy Wars games.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a tin.
I didn't see that, but that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. That was pretty cool. We did go to Super Potato. I did find that.
Oh, of course, Super Potato. What the fuck is Super Potato, Craig?
How do you people not know these things? Super Potato.
Why would we know that?
Yeah, why would we know Super Potato?
Why would you not? I don't know. Super Potato. Okay. Okay.
So guys, I went to Silly Feet today. You know, I found that. That was pretty fun.
Mm-hmm. Super Potato is probably one of the more well-known, like, retro game stores in Japan. It's like three stories, and it was kind of expensive, actually. It's a little on the pricey side.
That's what happens when you got a big name, like, right? Super Potato,
like Super Potato. But I mean, but the thing is it's you know, because it's so, I don't want to say competitive, but it's just there's no standardized pricing. Like, basically, here, if you buy used games, you go to GameStop. GameStop has a corporate, you know, list of what these games are worth. It's not like that in Akihabara. So you just cruise around, like, looking for deals. So, I mean, I bought a bunch of games at all kinds of different stores. And that's the really cool part. It's just hunting, you know. And you never know what you're going to turn up. Like, I bought... What else I bought? I bought Mega Man Legends on the PSP. It's called Rockman Dash there. I bought both of the... there's three Yakuzas there that haven't come out here. And they're basically, like, side story things. There's one on the PSP and two on the PS3. I bought the PSP one, and that was kind of pricey. Like, PSP games seem to hold their value there. Like, they seem to go for a few bucks. Like, they don't really tank in price. It's really weird. But I picked up the PSP one. I picked up Kenzen, which is, like, this prequel takes place, like, in medieval Japan. So
that was really interesting. That's a very prequel-y prequel.
Right? I didn't pick up Of the End. I really wanted to, but it was still kind of expensive. It was still, like, $60+, like, used. And I'm like, nope, I think I'll wait on this. And then I come home and find out Dead Souls is, you know, Dead Souls is Of the End. It's coming out here, so...
Mm-hmm.
That was, I'm like, I'm glad I passed on that. I'm glad I passed on that. So I will have all the Yakuzas. That makes me very happy. I picked up.
Did you get any Mega 10 games while you were there?
I did. I got three Mega 10 games. I got the very first one, which I actually did buy here. I bought it from eBay at an auction, and I paid like $8 plus like $3 shipping or something like that. And it never came.
Oh.
Ugh.
One of very few bad experiences I've had on eBay. And, but normally that game goes for, like, it's usually, like, buy it now, and they go for, like, $30. I got it for $8 there.
Nice.
Yep. And I got a couple of, I got, Last Bible 2, so now I have all the Last Bibles except for one of them. I have it, but I don't, this was, like, an enhanced, Last Bible 1 came out on the Game Boy and the Game Gear and the Game Boy Color. And right, exactly. The Game Boy Color is the same exact thing as the Game Boy one, just with a slight palette, you know? And here's the weird thing. So I already own it on the Game Gear, and I already own the Game Boy version, but I do not own the Game Boy Color version of Last Bible. I do, however, own its American localization, Revelations the Demon Slayer. So, so do I really count that? I don't know. But that is, I am missing that Last Bible. Otherwise, I do own the entire Last Bible series now. And then I bought, they have like this Pokemon, not that, I mean, Megaton's already sort of Pokemon-ish with recruiting demons, but they have one that's even more Pokemon-ish. It's called Devil Children. And one of the series of Devil Children came out over here is Demi Kids, which is weird, on the Game Boy Advance, this light version and dark version. But they have a few of the Devil Children in Japan, and on the Game Boy Color they have Black Book and Red Book. I already had Black Book, so I bought the Red Book version.
Dude, I don't even know how you like keep track of all these Shin Megami games.
Yeah,
it's hard. Like things crop up. I found out that like not that long. I shouldn't say, this is a little while ago, but it was already while I was in the thick of things that they were like, there's so many ports and remakes of like. Shin Megami Tensei 1 and 2 for the Super Famicom. Like, apparently there are Game Boy Advance versions, and they're super expensive. They're not very common. Like, I saw on eBay, I saw a cartridge only of Shin Megami Tensei. It was like $100. And Shin Megami Tensei 2 in the box was like $120, and I'm like, what the fuck?
That's...
Ugh.
Yeah.
Really expensive.
Yes, it is. But yeah, so I mean, I bought a lot of video games. We went to Nakano Broadway, which is like this indoor, like, I don't know, like strip mall or something. I don't know, it's hard, but there's a lot of nerd stuff in there. A lot of like action figure stores and, like video game, there's a couple video game shops and they actually have whole shops. You know, Gashapon, the capsule toys?
I know capsule toys.
Okay. Well, that's what they call in Japan. But Capsule Toys, like, they come in series, and they're, like, you know, they're, like, kind of, like, a big deal. Like, they're really nice little toys. Like, in many cases, they're nicer than, like, McDonald's toys, you know? And you'll have stores that are dedicated to selling these things. They'll have, like, the entire, like, particular, like, series up there, and you just buy them without having to guess. It's really kind of different. But they had stores like that, and, they had some, there's one video game shop in Nagano Broadway. Lots of rare stuff. Lots of really cool stuff. Super de-duper expensive. I bought Popful Mail for the Super Famicom.
A Popful Mail?
Yeah, it was, here we got the Sega CD version, which is probably the best version, but that gets expensive. It's probably like over $100 on eBay. So, like, whatever. I'll buy this slightly dumbed-down Super Famicom version for, like, $12. I bought a whole case of Spirit Tracks Mystery Box figures. Because they were...
What are Mystery Box figures?
They're like, man, what kind of nerd are you?
A bat, apparently.
Yeah, they're like, well, they're like capsule toys, but instead of buying them in capsules, you buy them in stores. They're like a whole series of like little figurines or whatever, and when you buy them, you don't know which one you're buying. They just come in a they all have like these standardized little boxes, and you open it up, and that's the figure you get. And if you want to collect the whole series, you have to buy a whole fuck ton of these figures, because you'll probably get duplicates. So I'm like, fuck that noise, I'm going to buy a case. So I bought a whole case of them. It was only like $12. $12, $15, something like that. So
you wasted a lot of money in Japan.
I did. Is this what you're saying? I blew a lot of money. Yeah, people have asked me, like, oh, I've gotten, like, messages and stuff. People ask me about it, like, oh, how much did you spend? I spent, like, $3,000. Like, it's not a cheap trip. And that was me. Like, that's what I spent. It was probably about that per person.
Jesus Christ, I could not afford Japan.
Well, here's the thing. We stay at, like, a really nice, like, 5-star hotel, and we don't really, like, look around for, like, airfare discounts. So if you wanted to stay at a less nice hotel, and you found a really good bargain on airfare, and you didn't buy, like, 30 video games like I did, it would actually probably be much cheaper. We also ate a lot, too. Japanese people love food. And it's like, you'll be walking down the street and you'll smell something like, oh, that smells good. So then you stop and you eat and you're like, oh, that was fantastic. And then you walk a few more blocks and you smell something else like, fuck, I want to eat that too. So we ate a lot. And
plus, when you're traveling like that, you tend to like walk more. Oh, well, so then yeah. You get like hungry a lot more.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah. I walk like 12 hours a day. I lost 5 pounds in Japan. I ate more than I did here and I lost 5 pounds. It was nuts. But you know, a lot of like the noodle houses and stuff have this really cool, like you don't order from someone there. Like there's usually like right inside or just outside the door. There's like a machine, like a vending machine. And sometimes it has pictures, sometimes it doesn't. And you put in your yen and you press a button on what you want and a ticket pops out and you give your ticket to the cook and he makes it. And then when you're done, you just leave because you're done.
Sweet.
Yeah. It's really like very small amount of like human interaction involved with that.
I guess that's a good thing.
Kind of. I don't know. It depends. I mean, if you're in a hurry, you just beep, boom, get your food and leave. Like, I guess there's a convenience to it for sure. We spent some time in Shibuya, in Ginza.
Dude, did you like grind on buses and spray paint tag everything?
No, I can't understand the concept of love. Didn't happen.
All right.
No, we did not. We did not do that. Went to some touristy places. Like, you know, we went to Osaka. We went on Sunday. Holy shit! So many people. So many people. I've never seen so many people walking around Tokyo in my life. It was bananas.
Were they Japanese?
They were Japanese.
Wow.
I know. Weird, right? Japanese people walking around in the Japanese city.
That's crazy.
What?
I was a little disappointed with Ginza this time. Because last time we went, it was like this neon like paradise at night. It was so cool, and I really wanted to get some shots of it this time. And I don't know. I think that they're in this mode of conserving electricity because we saw a lot of signs like around saying like save electricity and all that stuff. And it's probably tied to Fukushima,
mm-hmm.
if I had to guess. So a lot of the neon signs. I understand why the neon signs weren't lit up. Don't get me wrong, but it was kind of disappointing. Because, I mean, there's this intersection near the Wako building and the Sanai building. I'm sure you guys don't know what I'm talking about. But they're these major, like, landmarks in Ginza. And it's right there at that intersection. It's fucking gorgeous at dusk or at night. Like, just so many lights. It's amazing. And was a lot less amazing this time. But what can you
mm-hmm.
do?
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at pictures of it.
Yeah,
that's amazing all lit up. Wow. Oh, yeah.
Are you being sarcastic?
It sounds like.
I can't even tell anymore.
I know. He just says things and, like, he doesn't even know what he's saying. Fucking crazy. But Tokyo's awesome. You know, there's a lot of green there. Like, it's a really, like, a lot of trees and a lot of parks. It's not. because I think a lot of people get this picture of, like, you know, like a, like we're talking about Ginza, like this neon metropolis, but there are places like that, of course, but it's very green and a lot of parks, and it's super safe too. That's one of the best. Like, you could, I mean, I don't fear anything.
Yeah, walking around. If you're like 5 feet tall, you can't. What are they gonna do?
I don't know. I don't know what they're gonna do.
That's but why it's, except for ninjas, I guess. You gotta watch out for ninjas.
Our hotel sits like right in the middle of Shiba Park, and you know, we would cut through the park to get home at night, and like, it doesn't matter that it's dimly lit, you know, some ass hour of the night, doesn't matter. No one's gonna do anything. Awesome. You know what it's like to feel like that? I feel like Superman.
Did you go to any arcades, Craig?
I did go to some arcades. I played some games. I played through like Blaze Blue Continuum Shift by myself. No one wanted to play with me, so I just played.
You gotta play like weird Japanese arcade games.
We did. Well, there was this one game I didn't play it. I have video footage of it, and when I get my off my lazy ass to actually put together a video about Japan, my friend played it, and it was this game where like you have like this giant plastic like tea table in front of you. And you have this, and then you have the screen behind that. And your goal is to, as people walk around on the screen, like it's like it'll be like in a living room or in a restaurant or something like that. People are milling around, and your goal is to slam on the table when people are in position to spook them, and then throw the fucking table up so all this shit goes flying on the screen. And your goal is to knock shit around as much as possible.
Now this is an arcade game I wanted to hear about.
It was the coolest fucking thing ever. I'm like, this is a game. Like, you slam on the table to scare people, and then you throw all this shit at them. And this shows this slow mo replays like over and over. The people flutter out of shit. No, that was really cool. That was a lot of fun. That's a weird Japanese arcade game for you. They have a lot of like card games for the arcades. Square Enix has one called Lord of Vermillion. And you buy, like, these starter decks, and the cards contain information. And when you put them, you know, down on, like, you have this whole giant playing field, and then you have a screen as well. You put them down, like, the game knows what card you have and what position you put it in and how you move it around and stuff. It affects the game. I didn't quite understand it myself, so I didn't play it. I bought the cards. I'm like, yeah, I'll buy these cards.
You always buy the cards.
I always buy the cards. I didn't play the game. But I did play this really cool, and there's a Shining Force game called Cross Raid. Sega has in the arcades, and it's an action RPG, and you buy a plastic, like, looks like a credit card for, like, 500 yen, and then you play the game. It's time, so I think it's about 10 minutes to 100 yen, and you put the card in the machine, and your data, your character is persistent. It saves to the card, which is really, really cool.
That's really interesting.
Sega's always doing that. They have that with their Initial D games over here.
Well, right. I mean, some racing games have that too, but I think this is just the first time I saw it in something like an action RPG where I would care about if my stuff is persistent. I don't care in a racing game.
Ah, so it's existing technology applied to something you care about now.
Yeah, actually. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. That's exactly what it is. So, yeah, some cool things. I went to Sega. Sega, there's this island off the coast of Japan. It's called Odaiba, and it's, like, man-made. And it's a lot like – it reminds me a lot of, like, Atlantic City, but less, like, crappy. And Sega has an arcade slash, like, almost like an amusement park there called Joypolis. And there's rides and shit in there. And your ticket's really cool. It's like this thin, silvery piece of plastic with, like, all your information printed on it. I'm like, whoa, this is the fucking future, man. And we went in there, and I was playing one of the UFO catchers, which is like a crane game. And they have one machine there it's only one machine, but it's full of, like, these Sonic the Hedgehog statues, like these big statues, big package. These 20th anniversary Sonic the Hedgehog statues, you can only get them in this one machine in Joypolis, and I won. Motherfucker, I won a Sonic statue. And the attendant knew, he came over and he showed me how to win. he opened the thing and showed me where the claw needs to be to win. So I'm like, oh, watch this shit. Beep, beep. And then I won. I'm like,
oh, that was nice of the attendant, I guess.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's still some skill involved. Like, just because you know where it needs to be, because I had a vague idea how it worked, because you don't want it right. it's hard to explain how it works, but without seeing it. But you don't want the claw to be right over the thing because it's not going to do it. It needs to be, like, off-center. And I would sort of figure that out, but, you know, even if he shows you exactly where it needs to be, I mean, you still have to stop your button presses pretty accurately. So there's some skill involved, I'm not gonna lie. But I got that, and he was happy. He was high-fiving me and everything. I think he just wanted me to win because he already had a bag with him for me to put the shit. I think he just wanted me to win. So, like, 400 yen, I have a 20th anniversary Sonic the Hedgehog statue, so that's pretty cool.
Sweet.
Pics?
Do I have pics of it?
Pics yeah. or it didn't happen.
I do have pics of it, and I do have video of it, too, up on my YouTube channel. I do show it there as well, so... But, I don't know. I mean, I guess that's, I really didn't have much planned out about what I was going to talk about my trip, but, so I've been sort of rambly and incoherent, but is there anything in particular you guys would like to know about it?
No, I don't really.
You're like, no, I really don't want to hear it.
I just zoned out this whole time.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
Where'd you go, Cuba?
Well, I just figured some of, Cuba. I just figured some of our listeners might want to hear about it. I you know, a lot of people, oh, I would love to go to Japan. It'll happen. I remember. Oh man, I'm gonna admit something to people right now.
Yes.
And like, yes, I'll be able to make fun of
the Craig truth comes ever. Out.
The truth comes out, and this is gonna sound really corny, but I think like, I don't believe that it's like fate or some supernatural divine intervention. But I feel like if you really want something, and you maintain a positive attitude about it, you'll eventually achieve it. I do believe that. And when I was like 18, that's when like my interest in going to Japan, not as like a gamer, but as an interest in the country and the culture, that's when that started. And I actually put a picture of Shibuya Crossing up on a bulletin board in my room. And so I'm going to fucking go there. And I know it sounds corny. I know it sounds like
Craig, isn't that the secret?
I think it is.
What's the secret?
The secret.
I'm not...
It's like a thing where you envision something that you want, and then you do, like, positive things or something, and then you'll be rewarded with what you want.
Yeah, there's, like, a book about it or something. Yeah.
It's like a self-help thing?
It's like a book and a DVD. Yeah, exactly. Well, it's supposed to be the secret to get whatever you want.
It's not really a secret, then, is it?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. You just gave it away.
I mean, I found out about it from an episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, so it's not that big of a secret.
I didn't hear it. Is this a big thing?
I'm pretty sure it's a huge thing.
Oh, okay. Well, I should clarify that and say you'll probably get it, but...
I mean, it's not potato store huge, but I guess it's pretty...
Super potato.
Whatever.
That was fantastic. That was good. What can I say to that? But I probably should have planned this out a little bit better about what I was going to say, but... Whatever, I just got up, so I've been working all week, so get off my nuts. But it was a good time, and I think if people have the money and the capability to go to Japan at least once, they should.
And they know the secret.
Put a picture of Shibuya on your bulletin board. And they should definitely go. Like I said, I would totally live there if I could. I would. You know, I mean, the sad thing, when I was coming home, like, the only thing I was looking forward to seeing was my cats.
Oh, wait, no. You're... airplane. Did you, like, get anything cool on your airplane yet this time?
What do you mean?
Like your own little personal TV thing?
No.
Oh, thing. God.
No, there was no personal TV. Nothing cool. That
Did
was
the smoothest
flight,
though.
The flight from Detroit to Narita was, and it's like 13 hours long, no turbulence. Smoothest fucking plane ride I've ever had in my life. So... relieved, but every other plane ride was like bumpy as shit. And Delta, like every single flight, like they fucked up. Like, we don't have enough fuel. Yeah, you should probably get that in there, huh? Or like, something's broken. We have to replace it. Oh, yeah, please do.
I'm like, yeah, Delta screwed up a Hawaii flight for me once.
Yeah.
Like, had to fly out like the next day. Like, made us all wait on an airplane for like an hour. And then they're like, oh, no, this pilot can't fly for some reason. They didn't say why. I don't know. He's probably drunk.
Yeah.
Probably.
Oh, man. That sucks. When we were going home, we got to Detroit, right? And we're going home we're flying to Providence. And I was just like, I just want to go home. I spent 11 hours on a plane. I just want to go home right now. And they kept moving our gate around. Like, oh, this plane doesn't work. I'm like, you guys are not instilling much confidence in me. I'm like, so they kept moving our gate around, and then it was a pain. So I probably won't fly with Delta again.
Unless they're the cheapest.
Unless, well, there might be a reason behind that. But all their staff was very friendly. Friendliest, you know, staff I've ever dealt with while flying, but everything else was garbage.
They're probably used to telling people that they're terribly sorry that their company sucks.
Yeah, probably. Probably right. But I guess that's all I really have to say about my trip to Japan. I mean, it was awesome. It was, like, over a week, so, like, a lot of stuff happened, but I can't. I'm, like, still, like, half asleep, so it's very difficult to remember all this stuff without actually having written it down. But do you guys have any follow-up questions to perhaps?
No, I think my airplane one was it.
Oh, okay.
No, I think you covered
it. Man, this is going to be a bad episode of the podcast. Hey, everyone.
It'll be fine.
The podcast people just, is back.
People will just be glad it's back.
I went to Japan, and I'm really sleepy right now. So
this is the otaku episode.
This is the otaku episode. But I really recommend going. It's expensive. You could probably do it cheaper than I did. But it's just, I don't know, it's a one-of-a-kind place. And I, like I said, would just live there. I would live there. I would sell my video game collection. Like, you take a video game collection? Nope, I would sell it.
No.
I would sell it.
No, I'd buy it.
Save for a few. Like, save for, like, maybe, like, a 3DS or, like, one console and a few games. Like, I would probably keep some things. But, nope, the vast majority of that shit I would sell.
Let's do this. You sell me your collection, and then you go to Japan.
It's not that easy.
It is. Like, $10.
go for
it. Right, I'll give you 15.
1550.
Round one, fight.
Yes. So, Craig, what game are you going to give away?
Well, here's the really cool thing about the game I was going to give away. One of our listeners actually provided the game.
Ah.
And this listener's name is Angel, and he posts on the TV Less forums as Setherial. I'm not sure how to pronounce that, but it's probably something along those lines. And he's a really awesome poster because we have a game deals board. And it's pretty much, you know, populated by his posts. Mm-hmm. But he's really good at finding really good game deals. And I'm not talking about the stuff that everyone knows about. Like, I'm not talking about, like, the Toys R Us buy two, get one free sale. Like, he finds, like, these really, like, cool, like, he'll find, like, a special edition that's selling for, like, $20 on, like, Newegg. He'll just find, and he'll post that. And,
you know, it was thanks to him that I found the special edition of New Vegas for super cheap.
$30 or
there
something.
There you go. Yeah. So he's definitely a valued member of the community. And if you guys want some great game deals, come to the TVLS forums. Check out the game deals board and check out Cetherial's post because he's very helpful in that regard. And he provided actually a download code for Halo Reach for me. He said, well, you can keep it or you can give it away, whatever you want to do. I own Halo Reach. So we can give that download code away. If you have 6.6 gigs free on your 360, you can win this code. I'm not going to read it off the air, but, what you can do is instead go to the site and post anything, any kind of comment, non-trollish or asshole comment, doesn't matter. We're not looking for a key phrase here, but post any kind of comment, on this episode's article, episode 59 on the website, teamless.net. And you'll be entered to randomly win that download code if you want a download copy of Halo Reach.
Sweet.
So thank you very much, Setherial, for providing the code. Thank you very much for your game deals posts. We really appreciate it.
Reach is pretty fun, too. I like the space levels.
Space levels is pretty cool. I was actually playing the game with I'm pretty sure I was playing it with one of our listeners, Rusty. I like Rusty. He's a really good guy. And what happened was I still haven't finished Reach because I was at a certain point and then we started playing and then like co-op and then it didn't save. I couldn't pick that from that point in single player. So I'm like, fuck this.
That's weird. I think there's a certain way you have to, maybe only first player saves. I don't know.
I don't know. There's probably some quirk about it, but we made all this progress and then I couldn't pick up where I left off initially as a single player. And I'm like, nah, that's okay.
Yeah. So, I remember reading something about that.
I'm like, I'm done with this. So, I'm sorry if it wasn't Rusty and it was someone else, but I'm pretty sure it was Rusty. So, I feel like a dick. I forget people. I'm sorry. There's just so many of you. We have so many fans are coming out of the
he
wall.
He just woke up. He's very tired.
I am. I actually took some Excedrin PM. I was like, oh, shit, I'm going to oversleep this podcast. yeah, so post comment. You can win Halo Reach, which is, which is a fun game. So it's all good. We'll do listener questions now, after some insane rambling. We'll actually have some focus to this episode. If you want to ask us a question or just tell us something that's on your mind, gaming-related, check out facebook.com/TVNLust. Come like us. And I think what I've been doing actually on there lately is posting interesting links. In lieu of actually writing a news story and getting pictures and stuff and posting it to the site, I've just been dropping the link on Facebook. And, you know, if Chris, if you want to do that, because Seth, who am I kidding? You're not going to. Chris, if you want to do that, I'm just going to bust your chops about it till the end of the fucking time, man. But, you know, I want to get interesting stories to our listeners. I just don't want to fucking do the work anymore. So I've been posting links to Facebook as well. So if you want to check that kind of stuff out, facebook.com/TVNLust. So first question is from Andrew. He says, I recently got Duke Nukem Forever for about 10 quid, and I find it a lot of fun. I can't see what everyone's problem is with it. Well, Andrew, I'm glad you're enjoying it. I don't wish anyone I wish people to spend money on games and dislike it. But there's a reason why people write reviews, and they'll tell you why they have problems with it. I wrote a review, and I told you why I have problems with it, so you can check that out if you'd like. I also have a question. Do you think the Wii U will have some kind of achievement trophy system? I think Nintendo would be bananas not to have some kind of system.
So is that a no, that it won't?
Right. Good point. Well, Nintendo's already started doing that. Like, Wii Sports Resort has, like, that, was it, stamps or whatever? So it's. I mean, Nintendo's already seen the value in it.
I'm playing, like, Kirby Mass Attack right now. That has built-in achievements.
Does it? Okay. I still haven't played that, so I got to give that a shot. But it's clear that Nintendo, by putting it in on a game-by-game basis, sees some value in that. But I think it's probably about 50-50. They're Nintendo, and they do weird shit, and they might see value in it and decide not to implement it anyway. But I think, you know, as we've already seen, they're willing to do something like that, so maybe they'll do it system-wide. 50-50, I think.
I hope they do, just so I don't have to listen to people complaining that it's not there.
Oh, I know. As if that really just all... I mean, I know people enjoy it, don't get me wrong, and I don't want to take candy away from anyone, but it's not really like this, you know, it's not really that important, I don't think. But it would be nice if it was there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sagato asks, since Halloween is near, which is your favorite game to play around this time? I like to play Super Castlevania 4. To me is where they finally got it right. From the music to the controls, it's the best in my opinion. I can't wait to turn it on my Super Famicom and play it. I don't think I have a favorite Halloween game to play around this time of year.
I don't really play, like, a game annually during a certain time of year, so I don't know.
Yeah, generally I don't either. I think, though, that they're, like, the games that remind me of Halloween are probably not Halloween-related. They're probably games that I played in the past, like, in my youth, around this time, like, in the fall. So they may be completely... I can't think of any off the top of my head, but they're probably completely unrelated to Halloween.
Right.
I keep getting the urge to play Fatal Frame 4 around this time of the year, though, and then it just, like, scares the shit out of me and I can't play it, so...
So there you go. Yeah, like, video games to me are starting to become a lot like music, where, like, I associate it with, you know, certain seasons or different parts of my life, which is really interesting that medium is starting to have that effect on me. Maybe it's just because I'm getting older, but... Yeah, if there was a game, it probably would have nothing to do with Halloween. Azam, I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that correctly. Sorry if I'm not. He asked, what are your thoughts on Insomniac Games making a partnership with EA? Insomniac Games, of course, people buying Ratchet & Clank series and Resistance series. I'm cool with it. If that means that they are going to reach a wider audience and, you know, not get swallowed up by EA and then closed like other studios have been, I'm all for it. I'm all for that.
Same here.
Plus, their first game looks like it's kind of fun. That class-based, like, action game. Pretty good.
What game is it?
I forget what it's called.
I mean, wasn't this partnership announced, like, a while ago?
Yeah, and then we got, like, a brief, like, trailer. I don't even think there was any gameplay in it at E3, and, like, that was it. But games these days, they take, like, 3 years to make, so, I mean, I'm not really that surprised. He then follows up with a wall of text. what do you guys think of the creativity of this generation? For example, the creators of Uncharted are the same people that made Jack and Daxter series, and I think that there is a lot more creativity in the first Jack and Daxter than Uncharted. They were actually asked to do Uncharted. Sony actually said they were working on something else that was much more fantasy, that looked like something that Naughty Dog would do. And I've seen video of it. It looked like a lot of fun. I hope they come back to that at some point. But then Sony's like, nah, make us a shooter. So they did. And thankfully, it came out to be a good, you know, action shooting game. But, you know, it was that. That's why it seems really un-Naughty Dog, because Sony specifically asked for that. I don't get why video game companies have to always go realistic. For example, Ratchet and Clank is a lot better than the Resistance series. Well, that's an opinion. It's an opinion I share, but it's, you know, I think it's okay for like a studio to shake things up. It's okay. I mean, if Insomniac can handle Ratchet and Clank and handle Resistance at the same time, there's no harm. Everyone wins, you know. But what I'm getting to is that there was a lot more creativity last generation than this generation. I'm not saying that Uncharted sucks, but none of the Uncharted games felt like they were worth $60. Same goes with Resistance series. I'm not saying that Uncharted sucks, because I feel that Jack and Dexter felt a lot more creative than Uncharted. Sorry for asking too many questions this episode.
I think the problem is that like the budget for making video games has gotten too big, where the studios have to play it safe so that they know that they make a profit, so they have to be less creative because they have to make stuff that they know will sell.
Right.
I think that's exactly it.
That is it. And he's right. Uncharted doesn't suck. Uncharted, I like Uncharted a lot.
No, Uncharted is really good.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, Uncharted is a safe. It's a safe game that's made really well. So it's. I find it hard to fault it. But yeah, I mean that's a good point. It is a safe game.
I mean, if you took the exact same game and made the character like Jack, then I would probably sell like half as much.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, on the flip side, you know, now that I think about it, now that we're talking about this, was Jack and Daxter really all that progressive?
I wanted to bring this up, and I thought it was a fairly standard 3D platformer.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was a really good standard. I'm not talking about its quality. I'm just talking about for that time, that's the kind of games that were being made.
Right.
I mean, that it's not that dissimilar from Mario 64 or Banjo-Kazooie or anything like that. Like, it's really, it came on the tail end of that movement, but it's. It's a lot like many other 3D platformers, so a really good, like Uncharted, it's really good, but it also was kind of safe, actually. So, I don't know. I do feel like there's less creativity this generation. I think a lot of that comes from the fact I play so many games, though, and I'm starting to see the same concepts recycled over and over again. And yeah. It doesn't mean that they're bad, but for me as a player, it's a little less interesting to play those same things over and over again. But definitely seeing a lot more of that generation. But I think also we're also seeing a lot more downloadable games, a lot more creativity in that space.
Oh, yeah, the indie game market's bringing it.
They are.
Yeah, totally.
They are. And, you know, and I love that sort of, I mean, I've talked about this before, but I love the personal touch. I love the auteur kind of feel when you're playing, like, an indie game, you know, where it feels like two or three guys made it rather than, like, 500. You know, it's not designed by committee. It's like a focused vision of a couple of dudes making that on the computers in their living room, you know, hoping to make it big. And I think that to me is just a little more interesting. That's me, but I like that. So I'm hoping that, you know, that trend continues. But then who knows? Because, like, these games this generation have gotten bigger and bigger. We went from paying, like, you know, $5 on average on Xbox Live Arcade to now $15 is the average. Like, that's the normal price. And the games have gotten better, to be fair, but at what point do they stop being these small, creative games? At what point does that model become too expensive?
We're going to need the indie games.
Right, yeah. It's going to be really – Because if that keeps going, at some point they're going to be like $30 games, and what's going to be the difference between those games and retail games, you know? So we're starting to put up these barriers already, you know? I mean, Team Meat almost killed themselves making Super Meat Boy. That game bombed. Like, I don't even know what those guys would have done. Probably hurled themselves off a bridge. Thankfully, it was an excellent game, but, you know, it's getting to the point where, like, I think, well, not getting to the point, but it's starting, you know? I think you could start seeing it now where, like, indie games are starting to become a lot more mainstream, so the budgets are going up and the prices are going up, and those are the same exact hurdles what drove people to become indie developers in the first place.
Right.
Sort of like watching a whole new generation of games start over from the beginning and, like, end up to where it is now.
Right, yeah. In like super high speed. Like, it's just, it's like a fast forward, yeah. But that's really interesting. Cole asks, what's your favorite RPG games? For him, it's Golden Sun, The Lost Age, and Fire Emblem Radiant Dawn.
I like the Mother series.
It's a very good series.
I like Mother 3 as well.
Oh, and Mario and Luigi 1 and 3.
Those are excellent games. Those are really good. I like Skies of Arcadia, and I like some of the Final Fantasies. I mean, I like Final Fantasy all in general, I should say, but there are a couple that I like far less than others, and some that I hold in high regard, like 6, 9, and 12 are my favorites.
I will never agree with you on 12.
Ever. Hey, that's fine. I know 12 is very divisive, but I think that it was they did something really radical, and I think it worked out very well. So, yeah, I'd like to talk more about RPGs, but I can't think of any more off the top of my head. What about Western RPGs, actually, you know, before we move on? Are there any in particular that you guys did? Because I like Fallout. That's probably one of my favorites.
Yeah, I like Fallout 3. It barely feels like an RPG to me, though, so I don't know.
Right, right.
Like, mostly a shooter adventurer? I don't know.
So you're, like, shooting things. Yeah, no, I know.
I rarely like adventure. I just like going through the wasteland and, like, finding a town and, like, raiding it and stuff. That's my favorite part.
That was, the exploration of that game was awesome because it was a smaller map than, say, like, Oblivion, and it was more densely populated. So, you know, you didn't walk through, like, an hour of, like, wilderness to come across, like, some bullshit cave.
Mm-hmm. Also just, like, seeing, like, all the DC landmarks and stuff.
Yeah, that was definitely very cool. What about you, Chris? Do you have any Western RPGs in particular?
No, I think the one that I've played the most of is Fallout 3, but even then, it's only, you know, a few hours of it, but...
Mm. Okay. Matt asks, what model of iPod do you guys have? I have a second-gen 2-gig Nano. Frowny face. I have an iPhone 4. That's what I use.
I do, too.
I think my iPod's from, like, 2002. It's like
That's like the second generation, isn't it?
It's like a quote-unquote... It's a 6-gigabyte mini, and I use the term mini loosely, but I'm pretty sure that's what it was called at the time.
I used to have a mini.
Yeah. Yes. So this thing, mine's old.
That was, like, years and years ago.
Mine's 32 gig. Andrew asks, if you guys could bring back one canceled TV show, what would it be? I'm going for Firefly all the way.
Pushing Daisies.
I got sick of Pushing Daisies. I really liked it at first. No, it's good. But I think it's sort of like whimsy wears out by the time it ends.
I never saw the last few episodes.
That's where all the whimsy dies. So
actually, let's go with Arrested Development. Can I pick two?
But that is coming back, supposedly.
Is it? I mean, I've been
supposedly they're going to make, like, 10 more episodes or something before they make the movie. But I don't think there's a specific deal in place yet. But that's what they said in, like, the last month or two.
See, I would actually agree with Firefly, but I half wonder. Now, Firefly is excellent, but I half wonder if, like, it would get thin if it kept going. Because, like, you have, like, what is it, like, 12, 13 episodes or something like that. Like, really fantastic episodes. And then you have the movie, and it was all great. And I think part of why it's so appealing is because you can't have any more.
Yeah.
Yeah, plus they killed people.
Yeah, they killed people. They did do that, so...
I don't know how, like, fun it would be without them.
Yeah, I agree. So, I would agree with Firefly, because I think it's just so well done. And you know what? Honestly, like, I think about, like, Whedon's work, and... Firefly is the only real standout. Like, he has good stuff, but it's just good. You know, like, it's not great. I think Firefly is the only great thing he's done.
Nathan Fillion's looking kind of old now, too. So,
yeah, it's true. It's been, like, 10 years or something since this show aired.
Yeah, it has.
Plus, he's doing Castles. I don't know.
But I guess I would go with Veronica Mars, then. Veronica Mars. If only to save Kristen Bell's career, because I don't know what the fuck happened to it after that.
She's doing rom-coms now.
Yeah, but she's doing, like, yeah, she's pulling, like, a Katherine Heigl, except, like, at least Katherine Heigl's starring in movies that aren't complete shit. Well, no, they're pretty close to shit, but they're not complete shit like Kristen. Kristen Bell's got, like, some really bad movies. But Veronica Mars is awesome, and I would like to see more of that.
They filmed a scene of Veronica Mars in my work's parking lot.
Really?
Yeah, I've, like, never seen the show, but, like, some douchebag came and was like, you guys going to be gone by 6 because we're going to be filming Veronica Mars here. It's like, sure, whatever that is, guy.
You should watch it. I think it's on Netflix Instant.
Is it? It Maybe is. I'll just fast forward through a bunch of episodes so I'll see my parking lot.
Yeah, that would be good. Tell me what episode it is because I want to see your parking lot.
All right.
It's a really good show. It's an awesome show. What about you, Chris?
Yes.
Shut up.
I'd say Arrested Development. I mean, if it doesn't come back, you know, that would be my choice. And other than that, maybe Firefly. Because, yeah. Good. Those shows rule.
Those shows do rule. Sullivan asks, what do you think it takes for a game to be immersive? Personally, I think the only thing that is important for immersion is a control setup so fluid that I forget I'm even playing a game. Atmosphere is nice, but it's more icing on the cake, if you will, than an integral part of the immersion. The more natural playing the game is, the easier it is for me to get sucked in. That's why I have problems getting into Assassin's Creed and Uncharted, as I always felt the controls to be a little awkward, particularly when climbing structures, which is a large component of both games. Actually, I mean, that's probably a big thing for me is when I'm playing a game to forget that I'm playing a game. That's what's immersive to me.
I agree with a lot of it. I don't think it can be just controls, though, because, what you're doing in the game has to be interesting. Because there's, like, some games I'll play, and I don't know, I'll just, like, be, like, checking the clock every, like, 20 minutes. Like, is this shit still going on? You know?
No, that's true, too. I mean, maybe we can agree that control is a large component of it.
Yeah.
You know? I think people talk about immersion, they talk about atmosphere, like... I don't know what to say. Like, yeah, I mean, that's cool and all, but I agree with him. Like, that doesn't, it's icing on the cake. It's not something that draws me into a game. A lot of the most immersive games I play are handheld games because it's just me and the handheld, you know, and, you know, they're not known for their atmosphere, so. But I actually agree with him in Assassin's Creed. That's why I think the controls were the biggest deterrent for the Assassin's Creed series for me. They feel heavy and weighty. And maybe that's the whole point because you're controlling a person, but I don't want to control a person. That he jumps weird, man. You climb and shit, and then you press the wrong button. He leaps off. Like, what the fuck are you doing? I can't be the only person that's happened to.
No.
Okay.
No, I'm pretty sure that's happened.
Jumped off many a wrong roof in that game.
Yeah. So I definitely agree that's been a major deterrent for Assassin's Creed for me as well. What about you guys? Is there... particular component?
Is there a particular?
Yeah, I mean
immersive game or a non-immersive game?
Well, maybe both. I mean, maybe not like one that stands that, maybe not one component altogether, but maybe one that you feel is a little more important than others to be immersive.
I think. Are you talking about like game, like controls and such?
Well, anything that you find in particular is important to a game to suck you in.
I don't know. Like I don't know what it is because I'll just get lost in the game and I'll just forget about everything. So I'm not like entirely even sure what does it. But I'll agree. It happens a lot easier with handhelds for me. I don't know what it is, but when I'm playing a handheld, I just forget about everything else around me.
What about you, Chris?
I don't think there is one specific thing. I mean, I think it's just a combination, you know? I mean, controls are definitely very important. You know, like, I played the Resident Evil remake on GameCube, and I mean, it looked great at the time, and, you know, it was creepy and everything, but the controls were terrible, so I could never play it that much.
You gotta use a control scheme where you use, like, R to run and walk.
I tried that, and that was weird. It was better, but it was weird.
I love that control. It's the Shenmue control scheme, basically.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, you pretty much drive like Ryo around in Shenmue.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Tyler asks, "What are some Game Boy Color and Game Boy Advance games you enjoy?"
That's a lot of Game Boy.
Yeah, it's a lot of Game Boy.
That is a lot.
Link's Awakening.
Link's Awakening is a good one.
Klonoa 2.
Magi Nation.
Klonoa 2.
Klonoa 1, too.
No, Klonoa 2, 1.
Klonoa 1.
Magi Nation is one I enjoy in the Game Boy Color. That's a good one. Drill Dozer on the GBA.
No, that's it. Just those three games.
Yeah, we're done. I would love to answer these questions more, but we get these questions a lot. Like these, like, and it's just really hard to like list out all these games every episode.
Like that we've like three handhelds. It's a lot.
Yeah, it is a lot. Yeah. It is a lot. So those, there are some games we enjoy, and we all like enjoy like the same games. It's very homogenous when we talk about particularly Game Boy games, because it all ends up being like the same games.
Just play Mother 3. That's the only game you need.
Learn Japanese while you're at it, so that'll keep you busy for a while.
Now there's a patch. There's an English patch.
You don't even need the patch. I played without the patch.
Yeah, it's really not that hard.
But
Chris, what? What?
Nothing, just go.
Okay. Chris asks, I recently got a Genesis and the SNES. Any games?
I didn't ask that.
Chris, I'm pretty sure Craig just said you asked it.
No, no, he's wrong.
Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis. Go.
Genesis does.
No, shut up. Go. What's the question?
He got. He recently games? Got these systems, and he wants us to recommend games.
Wants games.
Mother 3. Wait.
Get Earthbound. It's really cheap. You could just find it like basically anywhere. It's like 10 cents.
Fuck you, man. Donkey Kong Country 2 is a good one for Super Nintendo.
No, too many Super pirates. Metroid. Super Metroid, yeah. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Turtles 4, and Time of Turtles.
Is that the real title?
It is now.
Best title ever.
Mario World, Yoshi's Island, Mega Man X, Kirby Superstar, Earthworm Jim for Genesis. You get extra levels and better animation.
I don't know what I own on the Genesis. I'm going to look this up.
Let's see. Where's my Genesis? I need my like list of Genesis games. I can't find it.
Some of the Disney games are good, too. So you get, like, Aladdin.
Oh, yeah, The Lion King.
Yeah, that's good ones.
Craig, I was, like, reading you, like, not as impressed with Quackshot as
I was, as
our other Disney games. And I think, like, Quackshot's probably my favorite.
Really? No, because it has, like, this fucked-up control scheme that is, like, that, like, a lot of, like, Genesis games do. Like, oh, we got three buttons, so let's, like, make run and shoot. Two separate buttons, so you're sitting there playing with your fucking fingers all over the fucking pad, because
you rarely need to run.
No, because he walks. No, you always need to run, because he walks so fucking slow.
Well, you rarely need to run, jump, and shoot.
No, wrong. That's a stupid control scheme. It's stupid, and you're trying to defend something that's bad. So,
well, what you wanted to do? Like, map, shoot, and run to the same button?
Weird, it works for Mario, I don't know.
Mario, you don't have to, like, line up plungers all over a wall to, like, scale it. It's a different system. It's, and you're, like, constantly shooting things in Quackshot. I don't know.
No, there's a lot of assholes in that game that need to be shot at.
Yeah, well, I think it works fine.
I don't. So you need, seriously. You need to, like, revisit levels. I want to run through them. I go, yes, I've already seen this.
Where am I? There we go.
Rocket Knight Adventures.
Cool Spot.
Streets of Rage 2.
Streets of Rage. I love Streets of Rage games. Sonic games. Sonic 1 through 3 and Knuckles. Get all of them.
The World of Illusion starring Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck.
Sparkster, which is the second Rocket Knight Adventures game. Is that it?
Yeah, that's it for me, so I don't know.
Buy all those games right now.
All of them. Go on eBay. Rusty asks, I need some advice as to which game I should play next after I complete Dragon Quest IX. I'm thinking about Kingdom Hearts Recoded, Chrono Trigger, Dragon Quest Monsters Joker, or Persona 2, Innocent Sin. Chrono Trigger.
Chrono Trigger is pretty awesome.
I hear double Chris.
I hear double Seth.
Wow. I hear all one of you, so that's all that matters. You guys can hear whatever the fuck you want.
We are cloning ourselves.
Yeah, yeah.
It's gone. Play Chrono Trigger.
Okay, unanimous. Hugh asks, do you have a favorite video game plot twist? No.
Let's spoil them.
I know.
All right. Here's my favorite twist. In Star Fox Adventures, Andross was behind everything.
What?
Who saw that coming? Yeah. Nobody, because it wasn't fucking led up to at all anywhere in the game.
It's just like Ganondorf in Twilight Princess.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
Same exact thing.
You saw my tweet.
What?
Oh, never mind. You didn't see my tweet. Chris saw it.
You tweet like once every like 6 months. No, I don't see them.
So how did you not see it? It's
still up on the site.
God damn it, no. It is not.
But, yeah, no, I mean, it's that, those aren't plot twists. That's just, ugh. Nope, I don't really have a favorite one.
Are there, like, what? Are there well-known plot twists in video games? I don't know.
Knights of the Old Republic, maybe.
I've never played any of those games.
Oh, okay. Well, go fuck yourself.
Okay. So that I do. In all Rock right, Band,
so anyway, we
I like
we
the twist in Rock Band where you don't play any original music and you just songs from other people.
And you become like worldwide superstars playing covers.
They love you for it.
Yeah. Play some more Nirvana, please.
Oh, you asked for it, buddy.
Angel asks, what are your thoughts on Skylanders Spyro's Adventure? I was tempted to purchase it, but at a $70 price tag, I wasn't sure I would spend so much on a game.
I heard Craig hates it.
I love Skylanders, actually. It's fantastic.
I heard the 3DS version sucks.
Yeah, worst game on 3DS? Is that what you're saying, Craig?
I'll talk about it later. I'll probably on the podcast. But I like it. I have the 360 and the 3DS versions. I don't regret either purchase because they're different games, and they're both a lot of fun. Mark asks, what do you think of Namco Bandai being the publisher of Ni No Kuni in the U.S. and Europe? Their name definitely didn't jump to the top of my list when thinking of publishers for the game, and they've had some negative press / fan reaction online lately due to the collector's edition change shortage for Dark Souls. What do they do with Dark Souls?
I don't know. I heard, like, they ran out of pre-orders for collector's editions.
Yeah, I think they ran out of pre-orders and they changed something to, like, a digital copy. Like, there was a guide or something. I don't know.
Well, that does suck. And that does suck. But I like Namco Bandai, and maybe they want to be at the top of my list, but I don't think it's really that surprising that they're publishing it.
Isn't that weird, though, since Level 5 just set up their, like, America studios? So
oh, I know. Like, they're all sitting there, like, in the office. Like, they show up every day, 9 to 5, twiddling their thumbs. Like, can we publish something? You're not publishing Ni No Kuni. But, I don't know. I don't think it's that weird.
I want the DS version of Ni No Kuni.
Yeah, really.
Yeah,
I want that book.
I made my video talk about the games I got in Japan, people were like, no, it's coming to the U.S. It's just on the PS3. What are you talking about? Because like, I picked this up because it's not coming to the U.S. Like, oh, it is. It's coming on PS3. That's not the same game. Like, that's why I bought the DS version. People are so weird. I think sometimes people just want to point out things to you, whether they make sense or not, because they want to flex some knowledge.
That's why you just got to cover all your bases, and you'll be like, which is different than the PS3 version?
I do that a lot. I actually do that a lot. And you hear me do it on this podcast, where like I over-talk things because I don't want to offend people, or I don't want to leave this open as if to sound like I don't know something else. And then you get people like, nuh-uh, stupid, it's coming out on the PS3. No one call me stupid. I don't care. No one call me stupid. But like, I know it's coming out on the PS3, but that's why I bought the DS version, because it's not coming out here. It's like, it's pretty simple thing here, but I don't think we're getting the DS version. I don't know why. Maybe because I don't want to translate the book.
Such a cool book.
It is a cool book. It's a very cool book, but I think it's going to be an in-game item in the PS3 version. No physical book.
Anyway, PS3 version looks pretty as hell, though. So.
That is gorgeous.
Yeah, damn, yeah. So, yeah, can't wait for it. Andrew asks one more question. Did he ask one before?
I don't know.
He asked the first question, so. One more question. When you started your YouTube channel, I'm assuming he means me, the people who you work with or other people find it funny, stupid, geekish, or just plain sad of you doing... No, because I'm a grown-up.
I was like, fucking Craig, that's some bullshit. You're talking about video games on YouTube? Use it for serious business.
No, because, like, I'm, like, almost 30, and I work with people who are even older than I am, and no one really cares, so...
They don't even know what YouTube is.
I know, the YouTube...
Is that place with the cats? They do the funny cat things?
Yeah. Nah, they don't care. Some people know that I do it, but that's not even, like, it's not like it ever comes up in, like, conversation. So, how was your videos? Like, no. Occasionally my boss asks, which is nice, but most people don't really care.
That's just because he's busy not giving you raises.
I just started gaming channel and people who I work with make fun of me for making videos. Yeah, tell them to go fuck themselves. Well, actually, don't tell them. Just ignore it. Who cares, man? It's not a big deal. Just make your videos. Have fun. Bill asked, what came first? The TMLS website, Twitter account, Facebook account, or YouTube channel? YouTube channel, by a long shot. And then Facebook account came last. But somewhere, I don't know whether the website... I think the Twitter account came second and then the website, but they were pretty close together, I think. So, yeah. YouTube, Twitter, website, and then Facebook. So...
It originally had music.
What?
Music reviews.
Yeah, I did. Well, actually, the YouTube channel, actually, I did all kinds of things on there. I did, like, social commentary and, like, music reviews and, like, movie reviews. I actually did all kinds of things. It was just sort of a crapshoot, and then I ended up focusing on games. Yeah, this podcast is even boring, Seth.
I just woke up, literally five minutes ago.
It's a very subdued podcast. Hopefully, we'll be more energetic next week.
It'll be fine.
But that's all the questions. So, talk about games we've been playing lately. Chris, you want to start us off?
Sure. I have been playing Batman Arkham City.
Batman!
I kind of saw that coming.
I was watching that show, like, last night. Like, the 60s Batman. So
is it as awesome as I remember?
Actually, the episodes I was watching back-to-back ones, and, like, the episodes I was watching was a Green Hornet crossover, so Bruce Lee was in them as Kato, so that was pretty badass.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, Adam West and Bruce Lee, same show.
Wow. I have been playing Batman. It's really good, you know, it's a lot like the first game, you know, if you've played that, you kind of know what to expect. Except it now has kind of an open world thing going on. Rather than, you know, being like Metroid-y, you know, you go linear up and down the asylum. You can kind of explore the world and go wherever you want and get side missions and stuff.
Do you have to like rescue kids' balloons?
No, you don't. There are no kids. because it's kind of like
they're too lenient on
the city. There's no kids in the prison.
Too lenient on kids these days. These kids should be in that prison.
It's probably the kids lose their balloons and then they get thrown in prison.
Probably. That's littering, dude.
So why is there like a whole city like for these people? I don't understand. Because it's an asylum, not a prison.
Yeah, it's an asylum. Well, they put all the people from the prison and the asylum in the city.
Like, who
doesn't have to make sense? It just gives you a chance to go around the city.
Whose choice in Gotham was it? Like, oh, let's just take this part of the city and make it a prison, whatever.
It was the warden from the first game and Hugo Strange, who is now, like, in charge of the asylum city.
These guys. I mean, was this, like, taking a vote in Gotham? Like, did the populace get to vote on this decision?
Does it really matter? You know,
sort of.
It's a really kind of a dumb premise to get
it is a dumb
open
premise.
World
I'm not gonna deny that,
into a game.
It works pretty well for what it is. I mean, it's not the greatest premise.
I haven't played it, so I can't say either way. I'll take your word for it. But it does sound pretty dumb.
it's a dumb idea. I'm not going to argue with that.
I've been watching friends play it, though, and it does like look badass still.
The game is pretty awesome.
Okay.
I mean, I wasn't sure how I was going to feel about it because I'm not a huge fan of like open world stuff. But it's more like a Zelda type world than like, you know, Grand Theft Auto. You know, you can go anywhere you want in the city, but like the main story stuff is actually in kind of segmented places, like indoors and in buildings and stuff. So there's kind of like levels, and you can play it as linear as you want. You know, so if you don't want to do any of the side stuff, you can completely ignore that, and it's just kind of like the city is just a way to get to the next level, basically. I kind of prefer the structure of the first game just because I tend to, like I said, not be as big a fan of open world games. But I like that they mix it up. You know, I wouldn't want to play the exact same game again.
Okay.
And a lot of the missions out in the world are fun. It's not just like go and rescue some kid's balloon or go stop this crime from being committed.
Though that is there, right?
Yeah, that is there. They have these, like, they're called political prisoners, so, you know, because there aren't any regular citizens, they're just people who got thrown in for stuff they didn't do or something, who are getting beat up by thugs and stuff, and you can go save them.
That's just... Okay, you had me, like, oh, it makes sense, but, like we'll throw in the most insane people from an asylum in with people for nonviolent crimes. Like... I'm trying to buy this. I am. But
it's Gotham City. That's fine. This is how
it's
they
run Batman. Their city. It's not supposed to make sense.
Okay. Okay.
Play the game. It's really good. Okay. That's all I'm going to say.
I will eventually play the game. I don't own it, so.
Yeah. I was a big fan of the first game, and I have not been disappointed by this game so far.
Okay.
Even if the story doesn't really make sense. I think the only issue, or my only issue with it, is that you kind of have too many abilities. You know, you start out with most of the gadgets and stuff you had in the first game, which gives you, like, you know, 8 or 9 or 10 or whatever different abilities, and you get more as you go, so it can kind of be a little confusing when you're trying to keep track of all your stuff. And each weapon, you can use it, like, you can choose it through the menu and then hold L and press R to use it, and they also have, like, a way to use it quickly, so you can use it in battle and stuff. But that's like press L and press Y, and it's a little tough to keep track of them all. So a lot of times I just kind of end up button mashing. You know, just
too many bad gadgets.
Yeah, that doesn't sound
like kind of
fun.
It's kind of a good problem to have, you know, if you just have too much good stuff in there. But
in this episode of Batman I was watching from the 60s, he had a gadget specifically for sweeping up alphabet soup and finding hidden messages in it.
I haven't found that one yet.
Well, they should definitely put that in the game.
I hope it's there. Although I will say, if it was gadgets like that, I probably wouldn't be too happy that there's a lot of them.
How else are you going to decode alphabet soup messages?
Well, I'm glad you're enjoying it. And I'll buy it at some point. Because, I mean, I didn't even buy Arkham Asylum until it was, like, $20 or something.
Mm-hmm. Is it weird that I'm holding out for a Wii U version?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I know some people have been waiting for either Wii U or Game of the Year edition because there's so much downloadable content and shit. Oh,
fucking things.
That's my biggest issue with the game is the way they've handled the pre-orders and DLC and all that stuff.
Yeah.
My friend had, like, 4 codes to put in, like, before he started the game.
Yeah, I had 2. It comes with a code to unlock Catwoman, which is basically the online pass, which is dumb because, I mean, I can understand an online pass for an online game, but, you know, for a game where you don't necessarily have to be online, you shouldn't really need to be online to play it. But the Catwoman stuff kind of, it's actually integrated with the game, so you have to do it before you start playing or you don't get any of the Catwoman stuff in the middle of the game, which is dumb, you know? But, yeah, I bought it at Toys R Us, and it came with, an extra skin, too, so I had to do that, too, which is, you know. But, like, all this stuff should just be available to buy now, you know, that's my opinion.
Right. Nobody wants to drink Nas energy drink to get, like,
yeah,
Batman
really.
Beyond.
I want that Batman Beyond skin, but I'm not going to go buy some Nas.
You should just buy it and, like, give it to a homeless dude or something. here's some energy, but I'm taking the Batman code.
Okay. Yeah, that seems to be taken to some extreme with these codes.
Yeah.
All those different skins and... In Europe, their limited edition came with all the skins.
That's cool.
They didn't get a physical... They didn't get that movie, though.
Fuck the movie. I have the movie.
Yeah, the funny thing is they have that drawer that it comes in, but it's empty. They got the same packaging, but it's just an empty drawer.
That's the thing, too. This game, like the first game, the special edition didn't come like in a regular case. It came like in a cardboard fold-out case. And in this special edition, the game comes like in a book.
Comes in the art book.
Yeah, it's like it's in a sleeve in the art book or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I didn't buy the special edition. It bothers me. It doesn't come with a real case.
Yeah, my friend bought it, and I was just like looking at everything. Yeah, like the books in the back, and then you got the drawer with all the DLC codes and the Arkham City, Gotham Knights movie, I guess.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Yeah, so it's weird.
Yep. Yeah. It's a good game. I definitely really am enjoying it. I mean, I think the open world stuff works pretty well for what it is. I mean, the premise might be a little ridiculous that they put, you know, an asylum in the middle of the city. But the game is fun regardless of the premise, so.
Okay.
I definitely, definitely recommend it. I think I'm enjoying it more than the first one, or at least as much as the first one, so. And maybe that's because I just played a little bit of another superhero game, Spider-Man Edge of Time. which is not good.
Chris playing a Spider-Man game?
I know, it's shocking.
No, Spider-Man.
That is not Spider-Man, no.
I rented this from the Red Box to try it out because I've heard pretty bad things, and it's not a bad game. I mean, the combat and stuff is fun. You know, it works just as well as it did in Shattered Dimensions and stuff. But the problem is that's basically all there is. It's just beating up guys, and then you go to the next room, you beat up more guys, and it just gets repetitive, and it's not fun. It's all indoors, you know, so there's not a lot of places to swing around and stuff, and that's a lot of what makes Spider-Man games fun.
I think I read the next Spider-Man game's going to be, like, back to open world swinging around.
Yeah, the one based on the movie.
This was just a paycheck game, then.
Yeah, it sounds like I think they started working on the movie game a while ago, and this one kind of got pushed to the side, which is unfortunate, because I think it's got a good premise, and, I mean, the story is actually pretty interesting, and, you know, the voice acting and the story is well-written and stuff, but
the gameplay just sucks. It's really been, like, pumping out Spider-Man games lately.
It's Activision.
It's
right.
They got to get one out every year, you know?
That's how they do.
Yeah. I mean, I really enjoyed Shattered Dimensions, and this one, I mean, it doesn't have a lot of what I liked about that game. You know, I liked the different Spider-Men and stuff, and this one, you only have two instead of four, so you'd think they could make each one a little better, but they just don't feel all that different. They don't have the different, like, visual styles, you know, one was cel-shaded, one was, you know, dark noir, and one was bright, colorful future, and here they just kind of feel the same, and, It's just not very good, which sucks because, you know, I was looking forward to it, but it gets very repetitive, just beating up guys all in the same, you're in the same building for the entire game, at least
what I played. It's like Die Hard with like Spider-Man.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
You know, you switch, and I mean, I like the idea of, you know, you do these things that affect the other time period, but it's all very scripted, so it's like you get to the end of the room, and you can't progress, so something will just kind of, you'll just have to do something. It's not like you can say, oh, I'm gonna do this to make the battle feel a little different. It's just kind of stuff
that
has
to happen. It's all
scripted. Exactly, it's all very scripted. Mm. So, I mean, it had a very good premise in the story, and I mean, but it just definitely did not go as well as I had hoped it would. I also picked up Professor Layton 4, but there's not too much to say about it because it's a lot like the first three.
So you're like trying to solve a murder and some guy's like, how many cans do I have if I do this?
I haven't come across any murders yet, but yeah, it's kind of, that's basically what it is.
When do you unlock London Life? Is that from the beginning?
It's available from the beginning, yeah. As soon as I boot up the game,
that's all. Right, that's all I want.
Right on the main screen, it says, you know, you can choose new game, you can choose London Life. So, if that's what you're interested in, you don't have to unlock it or anything.
Good.
Yeah, unless you're in Europe, in which case you don't get it.
And you know what's funny is that Australia is getting it
because they only speak one language there, dude.
Well, no, that's true.
They don't have to worry about all those other. Countries.
So, like, Europe, like, yeah, you don't get London Life. Sorry, guys.
Well, they don't like RPGs. Wait. This game isn't set in Europe. Wait.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't make any sense.
Have you played London Life?
I played it a little bit, but not enough to really say anything about it.
Okay.
But I'm glad it's there, because, I mean, you know, bonuses are always good, and I hear this is pretty meaty, so.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. But that's about it for me. A lot of Batman over the last few days.
How about you, Seth? A lot of Batman?
I have no Batman.
No, wait a second. I'm sorry, Seth. I already cut you off. Chris was not enjoying Soul of Toro when I wanted him to talk about that.
I enjoyed it a little more as I played it some more, but it seems like a lot of the battles and stuff are all based around the exact same mechanic. You know, just kind of grab the box, throw it, or grab the enemy, throw it, and keep doing the three combos, and a lot of the quests and stuff just seem to be all kind of boring, at least to me.
In the first half, like, that's how it is, yeah.
Yeah, I've heard it picks up in the second half.
I think that's the whole point, though, because, like, in a lot of games you'll be playing, a game is, like, a mercenary, and, like, you're doing all this awesome stuff, and you're like, whoa, like you, they're trying to paint this person as, like, a nobody, like, from the underbelly, but, like, you know, you're murdering, like, tons of things, and how are you a nobody? And, like, I think Solo Trouble sets it up better by making you, like, clean up trash. Mm-hmm. By using the same exact system. Like, it's not, you know, when you pick up trash or stack crates, like, you're using the battle system to do that. So the mm-hmm. game mechanics are the same, but, like, the sort of context is a little bit different, and it sets up Red, you know, as this nobody who cleans up trash to get by.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the mechanics aren't bad. I mean, it's just, it's weird when I'm like, I go to get a quest, and it's like, oh, go, we have a crate stacking competition.
Yeah.
I think I can see Chris's point here. Like, may set up the game better, but that doesn't make for, like, particularly interesting game.
But what I'm saying is, like, it's the same exact mechanics as if you battled. Like, the crates or enemies, it doesn't really matter. It's the same thing.
But you're still stacking crates, and that's, like, driving a forklift in Shenmue.
No, it's not more exciting than that. But what I'm saying is, like, the gameplay is not different. It's just the context that's different. It's the same exact thing.
Yeah, but nobody wants to stack crates in a video game. I mean, you do that shit in real life at a warehouse.
But what I'm saying is, like, what's the difference, though, if the gameplay is this, if it's playing the same? I mean, that's why I find it interesting, because it doesn't play differently. It's only boring because you think it's boring. It's not boring because the game plays any differently. It plays just like if you were battling someone. So it uses
feels
that
less rewarding?
I can see that. But you still get, like, experience, and you still get money. Like, I haven't played the game.
I'm just going by what I hear.
No, I can understand.
If somebody
that.
Told me, like, hey, do you want to play this game where you stack crates? I'll be like, no.
You just play Catherine, dumbass.
I'm like,
he's like, no, that's totally different. I can stack crates there.
And I'm doing it to save my life, all right? If I don't do that, I'll die.
That's probably how it works in Solo Turbo, too.
I think the problem is I don't generally even think the battles are necessarily all that interesting because they all utilize that same mechanic.
Okay.
And then when, you know, you go and you have to do a crate stacking competition or put these crates on these squares or whatever it is, you know, you don't necessarily even have that, you know, the tension of being in a battle and having to, you know, face the enemy or whatever the case may be.
But how long do these things normally last?
Not that long.
Yeah, they're about what he's complaining about is like usually like a minute long.
Whatever. Yeah, but there's a lot of them.
There is a lot of them. I think it's just an interesting way to set up a game where you use the same mechanics that you use to battle. So it's not like it's totally different. I mean, it's literally the same thing if you were fighting or stacking crates. But it uses it to set up the character and set up the world a lot better. Where a lot of these games, you're already a hero, you're already killing things, like, so. But they try. They also try to paint you as an outcast. Like, what sense does that make? It doesn't really make sense, I don't think. So, I mean, I understand where you're coming from, and I'm not saying you're wrong or anything.
Mm.
But, I mean, I'm just explaining why I think that that's actually a really appealing way to approach a game and paint your character as someone who's not very important, who then later becomes important.
Right. I could agree with that. And, I mean, I do enjoy the charm and, you know, the story and stuff, but... I mean, the gameplay was not as interesting as I had hoped it would be.
Okay.
And I think earlier on, it's a little more linear than I would have liked, too.
It is pretty linear.
You know, as I got a little further in, I mean, there was a little more being able to explore and stuff. And that kind of thing I like.
Flying's a little weird in that game.
Yeah, the flying was a little weird. I mean, I don't dislike it as much as I was seemed to on Twitter. I mean, as I played it a little more, I definitely was enjoying it a little more. But, you know... It's unfortunate that it takes so long to get going because you say it's better in the second half. Because I just picked up, you know, Professor Layton and I picked up Aliens Infestation and I don't have time to play all these games that, you know, if it's going to take that long for it to get interesting to me.
Yep. No, and I totally agree with that. I agree you shouldn't play a game if you feel like you're having to work through it. But, you know, someone for me was played... Like, I want to play Aliens Infestation. It sounds great. I really want to play it. But I've played a ton of games. Like, I just played Monster Tale earlier this year. Like, I've played a lot mm-hmm. of games like that. And just for me, I'm looking for something different. I'm looking for games that try to do something a little bit differently. So while I agree it's a little slow in the beginning, I just think it's interesting how they approach making your character like this banal nobody through its gameplay systems rather than everyone's like, oh, that guy, he's such an outcast. Like using exposition to tell you like nobody likes him and he's an outcast, but meanwhile he's sitting here like murdering tons of bad dudes.
Right.
Like, that doesn't compute, but a lot of JRPGs do that.
Yeah.
But no, but I mean, I just wanted you to share that because I wanted listeners to have a, you know, not a completely dissenting opinion, but a little bit, because all they've heard is me gush about the game. I wanted them to hear, you know, another take.
Right. I think that's part of the reason I was so surprised that I wasn't enjoying it, because I've heard you say such good things about it.
Mm.
Yeah. So I mean, I was enjoying it more as I played a little more. I think I got maybe 5 or 6 hours in.
Okay.
So, I mean, I'll probably come back to it once I'm done with, you know, Layton and Aliens, or maybe one of the two, but...
Okay. I mean, I told you it was trash collecting even before you bought it.
That's true. That's on me, I admit. Yeah. I didn't bring it up because it's been... I haven't played it since maybe last week, so...
I know, but we haven't had a podcast in like 3 weeks, but I just want listeners to have a different take on that, so...
Yeah.
There you go. So, Seth, you...
Hi.
Hey, what's happening, man?
Not much. Just chilling.
Hmm.
You want me to talk about games?
Please.
Ah, okay. Let's see. I started up Xenoblade Chronicles, and I can't play this game. Like... It's bad for my OCD, like really, really bad. Basically, each area you go into in this game, there's a bunch of like side quests that you could do for different people that you happen upon. And I mean, you don't know when they're going to like appear, like guys appear in town during certain times of day. You don't know like what time of day that is. And yeah, so you accept these quests, and then also there will be a point where you move on in the story and then you can't do like any of the quests that you missed out on. And I hate missing stuff in RPGs and such. So I'm gonna need like a quest guide list or something before I play this game. But otherwise, the game's really, really pretty. Like, character models look like ass, but the world looks really good. And the gameplay system, the fighting, it's basically, I'm going to say it's like Final Fantasy 12, but less involved. Huh. Like, pretty much, you just, like, run up to an enemy, and you, like, choose attack, and your guy starts, like, auto-attacking him.
Oh, yeah, and, yeah.
And then you could, like, if you're, like, meters high enough, you could choose to do, like, a super attack of some kind.
I have to get this game. I'm really, really interested in it.
Yeah, it started off, like, in some, like, dirty war zone-looking thing. I was like, oh, this game looks ugly. But then, like, gets past that and goes into grass and prettiness and such like that. But I played for a few hours doing a bunch of side quests, and I was like, this is just way too much. I've been playing Dark Souls. And...
Is it fun?
I'm enjoying it. I hear a lot of people complaining about how hard it is, and I really don't think it's that hard. Like, it's kind of tedious. It's really bad at explaining how to play the game to you.
Yeah.
But it's really not that hard. Like, as long as you block a lot and, like, choose when to attack, you'll do fine, I think.
I like Demon's Souls, but my problem with it, and I hear from you that this is the same way in this game, where, like, if you die, like, you clearly did something wrong if you died. Or the game surprised you because you just kind of like walk into a room and
yeah, something. Yeah, if you just run straight in like right away, some rooms will screw you over.
Right, and you know if for some reason some you know random element you couldn't have accounted for killed you, which it happens, I think quite often. The game then takes all your souls away, which are your currency, and then shortens your health bar. So it's like, ha ha, motherfucker, we sucker punched you, but now we're going to take away everything that you could have used to do better, and now we expect you to get your body back. And that's like, that's not hard, that's kind of cheap, actually.
This game does not shorten your health bar, it refills your health completely, and you get, like, another, like, it refills your health drink, too. So...
No, Demon's Souls didn't work that way. It actually hacked off your health bar and said, okay, so now you die with all your health, now try getting your body back with less than that. I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah,
this one completely replenishes your health, but you do lose all your souls unless you could get back to your body.
Right, and that's the same thing in Demon's Souls. You had less health, and if you die this time, then you lose everything. Like, what? Jesus Christ. So, I mean, I really liked a lot about the game, but the game was just... It's unfair in the sense that it sucker punches you at times when you step into a room or try to cross a bridge or something. But then it makes it even worse by taking everything away from you.
Yeah, I don't think this game's that bad at all, like, okay, in that regard.
That sounds a little more reasonable.
And you know, there's, like, lots of notes all over the floors from other players
and
such.
You can't trust that shit.
Actually, no, there was one. There was like a broken ledge on a next to a thing of stairs, and like somebody wrote, "Try jumping." And then I saw a ledge on there. I was like, "Yeah, I could probably make it to that ledge." So I did. I jumped down like off the stairs onto this little ledge, like at the edge of a world. And then like once I'm there, I'm like, "Oh, there's no place to go now." Like once I'm here. So I just had to, like, jump off and kill myself.
Oh, no.
So some people are kind of mean.
Yeah.
But most of the time, it's sound advice.
That's true. But, usually it is, yeah, usually it is helpful. But then, like, that one wrong one makes you, like, distrustful. Like, I don't know.
There is a way to make the game incredibly easy, though, and that's just to form a party. And, I mean, like, let's say you get three. You can have a party of up to four people. Let's say you get three people even. It doesn't make the game, like, three times easier. It makes the game, like, 20 times easier. So, like, if you get a party going, you can pretty much just, like, hack and slash through everything. Like, there's this one. It's actually two bosses you have to fight at the same time. I couldn't even come close to beating them by myself. With a party of three people, I didn't even land a hit on the second boss. And we still, like, killed him in, like, 30 seconds.
Huh.
So, you have to... Like, the game does not explain how to do this to you at all, though. You have to use your humanity. You have to get humanity from killing enemies, and you might get it, like, that goes directly into your humanity meter, or you might get an item that you then have to use that then goes to your humanity meter. Then you have to go to a bonfire. You have to choose reverse hollowing. Then you could become human. And then you could look for, like, a white writing on the floor to summon other people into your world. And if you want to get someone into somebody else's world, you got to use a white soapstone, which you get from some guy. But when you go into somebody else's world, everything you do does not, like, count towards your game, except for the souls you get. It, like, does not progress the story in your own game.
Oh, well, I'm glad this is very straightforward and easily accessible.
No, it's very... It's weird, too, because, like, when you first start the game, they actually start explaining stuff to you. Like, this is how you use your shield. This is how you attack. This is how you do that. And then it's just, like... You hit a point where they just stop doing that. They don't even care. They're like, ah, we're not going to tell you to do shit after this. Like, you could use the humanity you find to, like, kindle a bonfire, and then you get 10 drinks from your flask that refills your health instead of, like, the normal 5. And it doesn't tell you this anywhere. So, I mean, I think one of the reasons that people find the game so hard is because the game does not, like, tell people how to make the game easier. Even though all the things to do so are there. But otherwise, I'm liking it. It's not... You need to, like, go on the internet and do a lot of research to, like, figure out how to get the most out of the game. But it's fun. And, let's see. Kirby Mass Attack I've been playing. Have either of you played that?
I own it. I haven't played it yet. I haven't had a chance.
I haven't either.
This guy. The game's really damn fun. Like, You just control, like, an army of Kirbys and just, like, beat the shit out of other enemies.
That does just sound, like, fun.
Yeah, just, like, run through a level. They'll all, like, just gang up on one guy, start beating his ass. And you could have up to 10 Kirbys. You need, like, a lot of Kirbys to find all the secrets in the levels and such. But then the trade-off is that it's really hard to keep all 10 Kirbys safe. And if you want to get, like, you get raided on each level. If you want to get, like, a gold star on each level, you can't take any damage at all. So it's a trade-off of being able to keep your Kirby safe and being a super badass and just beating everything up in the world. But there's, like, a lot of innovative stuff. Like, one level, you're, like, in a hot air balloon, and you, like, control the hot air balloon by tilting the Kirbys, like, left and right, shifting their weight through it, and that's how you, like, control the hot air balloon's direction that it's going to avoid, like, spikes and such and pick up items. And then there's, like, a level where you, like, roll a ball through the entire level using all your Kirbys. And then...
Actually, that sounds really cool.
It's really innovative. I mean, the world I'm in right now, like, none of the levels are, like, standard platforming levels. Like, one level was a pachinko machine, and another level was, like, it's like an homage to... Wow, what's the racing game on GameCube?
What?
Air Ride. Yeah, it's an homage to Air Ride, where you're, like, on a star, and you, like, got to control all the Kirby through that. So, like, this world I'm in right now is just, like, a bunch of non-standard levels, too. It's, like, really, they get innovative with all the stuff you could do in the game. And yeah. I like it a lot.
I'll have to give that a try tonight, then, when we're done with this podcast. It's a long podcast.
That's it. That's it for me.
Cool. So, I've been playing a lot. And initially I planned on talking at great length about the games that I've been playing, but like I don't know if I can. Like, it's just I've already talked very rambly and very incoherently already. which is, you know, it's probably one of the most boring episodes of the podcast we've done in a long time. It's no fault of your guys. This is my
fault. Stop saying that. Then you'll make people think
it. I know. Yeah, that's a bad episode, guys. No, I hope people are enjoying it, but I feel bad because
this is a badass episode. Holy shit.
It's been a few weeks, and I don't feel like I'm on my A game, so it's me being apologetic to listeners, but I hope they're enjoying it anyway. So I have been playing Skylanders. Talk a little bit about
that. That's a stupid
Which one?
Right?
Shut up. I've been playing it on 360 and on 3DS. I finished the 3DS version. I actually played that a lot and I really enjoyed it. But I have not quite finished the 360 version yet. The 360 version is like a dungeon crawler. Ben Kuchera from Ars Technica compared it to Gauntlet. And I would have picked up on the fact that it plays like a dungeon crawler, but the Gauntlet comparison is actually pretty apt, I think. So you can't jump. You know, and you just sort of run through these levels and kill things and collect items and things like that. The 3DS version is actually more of a platformer. They're actually very different. And the platforming in the 3DS version is so good. The 3DS version is probably one of the best. It's probably the best, like, 3DS game I've played. If not at least one of the best. And
that bad, huh?
That terrible. The platforming is so good. And it's just a lot of fun. It's a little on the short side. You know, sort of like Mario, where instead of stars, you have, like, these crystals to get in each level. But, like, when you accomplish, like, the goal that gives you the crystal, you don't get ejected from the level. You know, you can actually do them all in one run, like Tony Hawk. You know, like an old Tony Hawk game, if you really are good at it. But and the game has, like, 120-some-odd crystals. I finished the game with, like, 70 or 80 of them or something like that. So there's still more to do. Some of them involve elements that I don't have access to.
Because you didn't buy the toys? Because
I didn't buy the toys.
Gotta get those toys, Craig.
Gotta get the toys. I have five. There are
how many toys are there?
There are 32. Exactly.
How many?
32.
Really?
But they belong to 8 different elements. You don't need... Here's the thing. When on the 360 version, there are challenge maps for each of the characters. But I don't feel that as a way to get you to buy each character. I feel it's actually the other way around. I feel like it's incentivizing the fact that you bought all the characters. But the levels in the 360 version have areas that you can't access unless you have the proper element. There are 8 elements, and the game comes with 3. So 3 figures, 3 different elements, and so there will be parts that you can't access unless you have that element. And that, I feel like, is more like is telling, incentivizing you by the figures rather than the other way around.
How much do the figures cost?
They're $8 a piece. Which is a little high, I think. I think 5 would have been perfect because that's 8's really not that bad. I felt like as long as they're under 10, it would be okay. But 5 is that impulse buy level, I think.
Really? I think Amazon had some on sale for 5, actually.
Well, that would be good. That would be good.
Not that kids can just walk into Amazon, but
right, you know, because like $5, like that price point where you're in GameStop and you find like a used game you want to pick up, and you think, oh, I'll pick up, you know, this figure for $5 too. That's a really good price point for impulse buying. 8's a little high.
I mean, they are, like, storing data and stuff on them, right?
Right, which is, I mean, it's only high in that context. I don't think they're unfairly priced, but I think, like, if they really wanted people to buy more of these, there's 32 of them. They really wanted people to buy more figures, I think 5 would have been a good price.
I think, like, the problem is that there's 32 of them.
That's probably true, too.
Yeah.
But I doubt most people are going to buy them all. You really don't need to. Like I said, you really just need the elements. And I have 5 of them because the 3DS version comes with different figures. But one of them it's the same element. Like the console version comes with Spyro. 3DS version comes with Dark Spyro. So he's still of the magic element. So I have 5 elements. I want to get 3 more. I want to get there's a street shark, man.
Really?
He's awesome. Yeah, he's an earth element shark. And he just like digs through the ground. I want the street shark. And the thing is, like, it's easy to be cynical about, like, this idea of, like, oh, I bought this game and I'm, you know, and I paid a premium price for it because it comes with toys. I paid $70 for it rather than $60 or whatever. And there's still content I can't access because they want me to buy more toys. And I understand without playing the game, if you've never played the game, that it's easy to be cynical about that. But having played the game is so good that it makes you want to buy those toys to experience that. it sounds like a trap, but on the other hand, I don't think it's a crime for a game to be so good that you want to spend more money on it either. That's what I how I feel about it.
Even the 3DS version is $70?
Yeah, which is really, really, really
that's
really
pricey.
High. It is pricey. But like I said, it is one of the best 3DS games I've played. Like I said, it's a little on the shorter side, 5 to 6 hours to get the 70-some-odd crystals, 80-some-odd crystals, whatever, that I got. But there's still more content. And that 5 to 6 hours is better than games that I've paid less for and have more content. I enjoyed it more. Just a lot of fun, and it's really good. The figures are, of course, cross-platform, you know, so I can play on the 3DS and level them up and bring that over to the 360. The console versions have competitive and cooperative modes. Like, you can play two players by putting two Skylanders on the portal. And then you can play competitively as well. And those are cross-platform. If you go to a friend's house and he has the PS3 version, you have the 360, they'll work. The figures will be fine. So it's a really great concept. And, you know, having played it, I actually want to buy the elements that I don't have. Like, that's just how fun the game is. I don't mind the idea of spending more money on it.
You're going to buy all 32, aren't you?
No, I can't see that happening. But I will probably buy the three. I'm missing Earth, Air, and Undead.
What's with all the games with Sky in the title coming out right now? There's Skylanders and Skyrim and Skyward Sword.
I don't know. Maybe we're just trying to be hopeful. Looking towards the sky.
I guess.
But, no, it's a really great game. I mean, if you can only afford one version, I understand, because, you know, they're a little pricey. But both the 3DS and the console versions are really, really good. But I think, overall, I think I've enjoyed the 3DS version a little bit more. That's just me.
Sweet.
I also played some Japanese Wii games I wanted to talk about. I played...
I want to hear about Pandora's Tower.
I knew you were... Yeah, Pandora no To.
Something about feeding a 16-year-old girl rotten meat or something.
Yeah, the game's really weird. The full title of the game is Pandora's Tower, Until I Return to Your Side. And normally I'm not a fan of, like, melodramatic names like that, but I actually like that name. It's a little wordy, it's a little verbose, but it's like romantic without being like awful. Actually, I like
nothing
that
says title. Romance like rotten meat.
The title, asshole. The title.
Okay, right.
but this game is really weird, and you know it's odd to see a lot of people like clamoring for this game without really understanding what it. Like, oh, that's how that game plays. Yes, that's how the game plays. So people are like, I want this game because it's I can't have it, and they have no idea how it plays. First of all, it's too slow to be a straight out action game, and it's too actiony to be an RPG. It's this weird, you know, cobbled together Frankenstein of elements of the two different genres. The female protagonist, Ceres, is cursed, and she's going to slowly turn into a monster. To completely rid her of the curse, the hero, you know, you're going out to, I think you're cutting these chains in these towers. And that will somehow read the curse. The story, there's not a whole lot of story progression, but the backstory, as the explanation of why the curse exists and all that, it's actually really interesting. But there's not a whole lot of story moving forward. It's all backstory. And in order to hold the curse at bay while you do this, you need to feed her, like, the hearts of, like, monsters that you've slain. That'll make the curse, like, recede. There's actually a timer. If you look at screenshots in the bottom left-hand corner, there's a circle. And that slowly unwinds, and that's your timer. You actually have to, like, leave the tower and feed her these hearts that you might have on you. It's not – there are checkpoints and stuff that you can return to, but, you know – and it really hasn't become overbearing. But, yeah, there is a time constraint mechanic in this game that I don't think a lot of people were aware of. The game is – it's a little clumsy. Like, the controls are really weird, and they're not intuitive, I don't think. But you have this really cool, like, chain-like lasso that you can use to, like, snatch items or, like, pull objects. Or, you know, you can use it to, you can throw it around an enemy and sort of, like, hold them there so you can close the distance. So if there's, like, a really fast enemy, you just chain them and then close the distance on them and then attack them. So, you know, there's some pretty cool ideas with the chain. I think all in all, it's a pretty cool game. There's also a crafting system and stuff. It's a pretty cool game. But I don't think it's quite what people thought it might be.
I hate crafting systems. I'm just going to throw that out. I hate collecting stuff just to make other things.
There's a lot of junk in this game, and, like, you have to, like, make treks back to your home to, like, dump it in a chest if your pack is full.
Yeah, no, fuck that.
So, yeah, there are some elements to this game that are, like, not that hot or a little, you know, on the sloppy side, but I think, all in all, like, it's positive elements outweigh the negative. It's a pretty interesting game, but it's not what I expected. I don't know what I was expecting, but it wasn't this. But yeah, no, it's okay. It's all right. I also played The Last Story, and I really like The Last Story. It's pretty linear. It's a pretty linear game. You know, comparisons to Final Fantasy XIII have been made. I guess on a forum that I posted on, someone said on a podcast, someone said it was more linear than Final Fantasy XIII, which is impossible. I don't even know how you can do that. It's not. It's actually probably less linear, although you can compare the linearity to Final Fantasy XIII. Because, for instance, I mean, within the first hour, hour and a half, like, you come to Ruli City. Like, you come to this major city, and there's, I mean, it's huge, and you can explore and talk to people and find items, and that's not something you can do in Final Fantasy XIII at all. But you go where the story dictates. Like, you know, you don't really, there's no world map or anything like that. And I think that's because it's probably more of an action game with a RPG-like wardrobe, like clothing on. You level up, you gain money, you buy better items, things like that. But the major focus is the combat. And the combat's really, really good, and it's really well thought out, to the point where, like, you can play cooperatively with other people, like, say, like Tales of Symphonia, but you can also play competitively with the battle system, which is pretty cool. It's when you approach an enemy, you automatically start attacking, which is really weird. You don't press anything. Mm-hmm. You just walk into them. Now, you can turn that off and manually press A. But the thing is, it's not an instant win. It's almost like a transmission in a car where not pressing anything is like an automatic transition. But that doesn't mean that you still don't have to drive the car. You know, switching it so that A button is attack is more like a manual transmission. You have a little more finesse. But the end result is pretty much the same. You also have access to this rapid-fire crossbow, so, like, it becomes like a shooter. You can take cover and shoot your enemies, and, like, headshot will appear up on the screen and everything.
Nice. That's what I want for my RPGs.
But it works. It's, like, really good. So you take these shots, and you can also, you can't control your teammates in single-player, but you can direct them to do certain things. And this comes in handy because the main character has this ability called Gathering. And when you use Gathering, the enemies, I don't know, they become, like, entranced. Like, they follow you. And they do, they walk slower, they're not as fast, and they're entranced, they follow you, and you can then direct your teammates to do things while the heat is off of them. And Gathering mode has other abilities, like, when you attack, you gain a little bit more of your health. You can revive down allies while you're in Gathering mode. And some bosses are, like, they're like puzzles, really, and sometimes you need to, like, lead enemies to a particular area on the map or something using Gathering. So, it's just really, really cool. There's also some, like, these neat little touches where, like, if a magic user uses, like, an area effect fire spell and the ground's still on fire, if you walk through it, you don't get hurt, but your blade ignites, so now you have fire on your blade.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
So there's a lot of cool stuff to the battle system, you know, and because the battle system basically carries the game, it's good. But this is what I mean by, like, it's more of like an action game with RPG dressing. And it works. It works really well. There are still some other things. Like, early on, like, you have to, like, lead this girl you find away from, like, guards, like, in the city. So, like, you know, it's almost like a chase scene and stuff. So, you know, it attempts to shake up things every now and then. But it's not, like, this huge open world and stuff like you might expect from other JRPGs. But it's still really good, I think. And I also played Earthseeker, which is another Japanese RPG that has not made it out of Japan. Maybe because it only sold like 6,000 copies in its first month or something like that.
I remember being excited for this game when I first saw trailers for it.
Yeah, because it looks really good. You know, it's like a budget game, actually. I feel like it's a budget game, but it was but and that almost sounds bad because I think the problem is a lot of budget games try too hard to be AAA games, but they're not. They're budget games, so they end up being crap. Mm-hmm. So, but this is a budget game that I think was made within its scope, and it actually came out well because it's a really good-looking game. You know, it has really great graphics, and it has really some pretty good mechanics in it. But it's pretty simple, and there's not a whole lot. Like, it's like Monster Hunter, really. I think there's comparisons to Monster, but it's Monster Hunter designed to be played by yourself because there is no multiplayer. You have, like, you know, the one city, but it's, like, empty. There's, like, no one in it. And your goal, like, the whole backstory is, like, really weird. Like, we destroyed Earth, and we sent out these huge arcs filled with people and, like, everything from Earth. And when I say everything, I mean, like, the Eiffel Tower, like, fucking everything around these arcs. But I guess cosmic radiation killed everyone on the arcs. Like, we all died. But all our shit's still on there. So these arcs are, you know, searching for, like, a planet to, you know, make into an Earth. They find it. They crash land. And they start synthesizing life. And the first life forms they created were, like, shitty and terrible. And those are the monsters of the planet. Eventually, the computers made Earthnoids, and, like, that's, like, you and stuff. So your
See, goal, that's kind of awesome. I like that story.
It is really cool. So your goal is to go out and find all these relics from Earth and bring them back. You know, Earthseeker, that's. It's, like I said, it's meant to be played solo. It's a little like Monster Hunter. So you have, like, these maps that you end up going back to quite often. And they're sort of, like, interconnected rooms, you know? Even though they're outdoors, they're almost like rooms with, like, particular exit points that you go to another part of the map on. And it's pretty much real time. Like, you see an enemy and you can go up and attack it. But what you do is you pause the action to do that. And you fill an action meter with attacks. And some attacks might take a bigger chunk of the meter. So, like, for example, you can see an enemy and you press A to target it, and it brings up your list. So then I might tell one of my have I talked about the Guardians yet? Probably not. I'm just
no.
Okay, no. Sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. You play it solo. You can actually have a party of, like, little goblins called Guardians, and they're magic users. So they're all elemental based, and I can queue up, like, one of my Guardians to attack this thing off in the distance with fire, and then after that I'll say, okay, well then I'm going to attack it with my sword. As we're running to it, the Guardians will fire off the fire spell, and by the time I get to the enemy, it'll be my turn in the queue, and then I will launch my attack. And then you can continuously fill actions in the queue, and you gain your meter back as you as the game progresses. It slowly fills back up. So pretty interesting. I don't know if I explained that well. I got ahead of myself there, but.
Fill up an action queue.
Yeah. It reminds me of almost like Knights of the Old Republic, where, like, you can go up to an enemy and press A and you'll attack, but then you can also pause the action and fill up an action queue for you and your teammates. It's actually, for anyone who's played that game, it's actually a lot like that. So it's a very solo-friendly Monster Hunter. And, you know, it's not a groundbreaking game. There's nothing really remarkable about it, but it's a good game. It's a pleasant game, and I got it for about $20. And I think if you can get it for around that price, and you enjoy the concept, or you enjoy Monster Hunter, I do recommend importing it.
Is it, like, if you can't read any Japanese at all, how easy is it to play?
Actually, it's hard.
Ah.
Yeah, actually, you know, come to think of it, yeah, it's, I even stumbled at some points, but yeah, it is actually, I mean, I could guide people, like, if Seth, you were to pick it up, I can give you pointers, it really wouldn't, you know, but I think for the average person, actually, you know, come to think of it, I might have to retract that recommendation for importing, because it is not friendly.
Oh, well.
Sorry. But that's about all I want to talk about, because otherwise I'm just going to sit here and ramble about games. I feel like a zombie. I feel like
who wants to listen to that on a gaming podcast?
I know. I feel like I'm dragging this episode down. I'm so sorry.
Video games. Craig, we're blaming all of this on you.
Well, I just talked about, like, 4 or 5 games.
No, I'm just kidding. We love you, Cupcake.
Thanks.
There's cupcakes?
Yep. Well, unless you guys have anything you'd like to add.
I forgot that there's a bunch of mini games you could unlock in Kirby Mass Attack 2,
really?
And they're awesome.
Oh, okay, I'm going to play this game when we're done.
There's like a pinball mini game that's basically like boss rush mode, but in pinball version. And there's a shoot 'em up that you could unlock. It's like a 6 or 7 stage long shoot 'em up that has its own, like, little unique Kirby mechanic where, like, you get more Kirby's just like in the main game, and, like, the more Kirby's you have, the more, like, area you could shoot. And it's like, it's really fun.
Aw, yeah, I'm gonna have to play this. Oh, and I wanted to mention, I've been playing Dungeon Defenders on Xbox Live Arcade, and that's really good. I already reviewed the iOS version, and it's pretty much the same thing, except, like, now you can, like, control it because there's, like, buttons and stuff.
Ah, that sounds good.
Yeah, and it's really good. It's like tower defense and, like, hack and slash, like, looting. And it's just really awesome. I love it.
Cool.
So I definitely recommend that game. It's really, really good. But I guess that's it. And there's nothing else. We can wrap up this episode.
Batman
rules. Let's do it.
Batman. No. TV Must. Thank you for listening, everyone. And until next time, take it easy.
Bye.